kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe, joining as usual, Cole. Cole, how are you doing?
I'm cold. It's fucking cold, Joe.
Yeah, it's starting to get chilly out.
Why?
Because it's turning into autumn, and that's what happens.
I think we're a little past the turning into autumn part. I think we've like, nosedived into turning into winter territory.
Oh, come on. It's not that cold yet.
It was, like, 28 degrees the other night.
Yeah, at night, what was it during the day? 50s and 60s? That's autumn. We're actually getting an autumn for once.
Yeah, but it's going to pour rain like piss out of a boot for like the next 4 days. That's not autumn. That's spring.
Well, then again, my wife told me that we might be getting snow from that storm, so it might be winter.
You keep that shit. You just said like the ultimate cuss word to
what,
me.
Snow?
I can't. Yeah, fuck that thing.
I love snow. I really do.
The first snow is always so pretty, especially when it's around Christmas. And then after that, I'm like, fuck this miserable horse.
I like snow in moderation.
See, that's the problem. We don't get it in moderation. Like, even when there's a dusting of it, because it's all dirt roads around here, we shut down the hills. Like, one lane dirt roads going uphill and downhill and the snow is just a goddamn nightmare. It doesn't matter if it's a dusting of snow. They can say, we might get snow somewhere in the tri-state, and everybody goes, fuck it, we quit for the day.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just not worth it.
Yeah, my dad lives in Tennessee and said it's pretty much the same down by him.
Like, everybody gives a screw, oh, you're in the south, you guys shut down for a little bit of snow. And it's like, no, fuck you guys, because I want to see you go down a dirt road in a rear wheel drive vehicle on, you know, somebody else trying to go uphill while you're going down. Good luck.
I've done it. I live in the redneck area of Pennsylvania, so.
Dude.
So I get the redneck from the south and the cold from the north, all in one handy package.
That sounds miserable.
Anyway, we have a lot to take care of on this show. We got a little bit of news, a couple of reviews, and our Halloween contest has come to a close, and we are going to find out who is winning a grand prize package of 20 Xbox One indies.
God damn. I didn't bring me an ink pen to write this down either, so I have to open Notepad and type away.
Oh, look at that. You're not prepared at all.
I am fucking not, because for like the last 3 months or so that we've been doing this shit, I've been doing it in the living room at my computer, and I've been good to go. All my shit's on my desk. Everything's nice and ready. And today I'm locked back in the fucking bedroom, and it's cold, and I ain't got nothing.
Oh, Lord. What are we going to do with you?
Laugh at my accent. Dialect. It's not properly an accent. It's a dialect.
Yeah, good enough. Anyway, there is a little bit of news that we got to tackle first. I don't have that much written down, just a couple of small things. First one is Sony has decided to delay Days Gone out of the super busy February time slot and bump it to April 26th. Hopefully this gives the game some time to actually stand out and matter, you know, if Sony actually gives it any attention.
I don't think it's particularly a bad idea for them, but yeah. I don't give a shit, because in that's Sony exclusive, so.
Yeah, that's why, like, Sony delayed it.
You know, maybe that's part of their strategy why everybody thinks their shit's so good, is because they don't release it when there's anything else coming out.
Maybe.
And then so it's like Stockholm Syndrome. It's all you got, so why not love it?
I love you, Days Gone. Like, I love you, The Order 1886.
The fuck is that?
It was another Sony exclusive that got, you know, kind of shit on because it was like a 3-hour game.
Oh.
Yeah.
But was it like an exceptional single-player story event?
No. No.
Aw. Well, that explains why I was like, the fuck is that then?
Yeah, but you know, Sony does have a good track record with exclusives. It's been reported that Spider-Man on the PS4 made more money in its first month than any PlayStation exclusive in the 24-year history of the brand across every platform.
Yikes.
So, holy shit, Spider-Man blew up.
Why Spider-Man, of all things?
Because it's a good Spider-Man game?
Maybe, but just, like, everybody hollers, oh, we want new characters and new stories and new experiences, and then it's like, oh my god, let me throw my money at Spider-Man.
Well, I mean, it's from Insomniac, so that alone bumps that
doesn't
up
hurt. How,
yeah. And it was a good game, so that helps, too.
I'm sure.
And Sony advertised the fuck out of that thing.
Also true.
So,
Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah. No, I think this one's actually just a good game. They're allowed to have good games.
No, they're not. They're Sony. Speaking of dicks.
Speaking of dicks, last bit of news that I have is that two games were added to the Xbox backward compatibility lineup this week. The first being Tropico 4 and the other being LEGO Star Wars 2, the original trilogy.
Oh, that's impressive.
Yeah, it doesn't make much sense considering LEGO Star Wars the complete series is there, which includes the original trilogy.
Well, but I'm sure there's probably somebody who just magically had games showing up that they didn't have because they didn't have the whole complete thing before.
Yeah.
There's always that one person that's like, fuck yeah, I got this now. And everybody's like, wait, but didn't you have that? It's usually me. But in this case, it's Star Wars, and I'm just like,
LEGO Star Wars 2, the original trilogy, was the first game I ever played on my 360.
Wow.
Yeah.
I played Uno.
Yeah, I think if I fire up my 360 and go to my achievements, if I scroll all the way to the very bottom, it's LEGO Star Wars 2.
I lie. I didn't play Uno. I played Pac-Man CE. That was on that little arcade disc.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and it had, like, Pac-Man and Feeding Frenzy and Uno and a couple other things. And it was Pac-Man was what I played. And then I ended up playing all the others. And then I played Uno. And then I played Halo. And David used me as bait. And I said, fuck this. And I got good at shooters.
Oh, Lord. But yeah, that's the news I have. Anything on your end?
No, I don't think I wrote down any news this week. I was just like flying by the seat of the pants I'm not wearing.
Not wearing any pants.
Which means I was flying by my ass.
Nice.
Not my ass, though. My ass.
Oh, Jesus. If we have no other news, we should move on. A quick thanks to Vertically Impaired. He just subbed to us before we went live for the eighth month in a row. So rock on to him.
Yeah. He might be impaired in other ways, but thank you.
Oh, he is. He said he's a bit buzzed, so hopefully he enjoys the show, because the next big chunk of the show is going to be our Halloween contest. We have a hell of a lineup of games up for grabs, including Resident Evil games, Emily Wants to Play, the Outbreak Trilogy, Killing Floor 2, All-Star Fruit Racing, Graveyard Keeper. There's just so a good. Lot of good shit in there.
Yay.
A lot of good shit. And we asked
There's some fear pee inducing games in that.
There is. And the way you win is if you're listening to this now and you want to enter, you're too fucking late. So
yep.
I don't know what you're doing wanting to enter now. We've been talking about it all month long. But we told you that we wanted you to email us the scariest moment that ever happened in your life. And we have 24 entries.
Nice. Are we still doing that where everybody that entered got something?
Yes, everyone who entered is going to take home something. It might not be anything huge because I got to spread out all the prizes among 23 other people, but everyone is winning something.
Very nice. Congratulations.
Yes, I'm making sure I went through everything. It's going to be a game, maybe two games if you're lucky and they're smaller games, but everybody is getting something.
Nice.
Yeah. Should we dive into these?
Let's go. I have my notepad ready on the computer, blocking your face so that I can type this.
Sweet. First email comes to us from Jack, who says, my scariest moment is not scary per se, but it was for me. It happened to me as a child of about 10 to 12 years old. I was playing with some small inflatable boat mattress thing in the water near the beach. Then a bit bigger wave knocked me over and I was under it with no air to breathe, and the current pushed me more underwater too. There were maybe 5 to 10 seconds till I got back to the surface, but I was just before a real panic attack that I will drown. That was the scariest moment of my life. Luckily, all went fine. Wish you all a happy Halloween. So nearly drown. Which to me is scary as shit, because I couldn't imagine.
I'm afraid of water and I don't know how to swim, so that's terrifying.
I used to swim in high school, but I'm just the fear of not being able to breathe just scares the shit out of me.
The college I went to, one of the donors had a child that drowned, and so they donated the money to have a swimming pool built on campus. And one of the requirements to graduate college was that you had to learn to swim before you could leave.
Oh, God.
I didn't graduate.
That's fucked up.
Yeah, I can't swim.
All right, next email comes to us from Martin Dippendall, who says, "Yo, what is up, guys? Scary moments, huh? Well, I can tell you many scary moments I had, like the time I dreamt I went to work without my pants on, or the moment when you reach the bottom of the stairs and you forget there's one more step. Oh, God, that sucks. Or when my phone falls on the ground with the screen turned face down and you have to check if it's broken or not. Not to mention some of my favorite scary games on Xbox, like Outlast or Dead Space or the Aliens game. But the scariest moment I've had so far is the time I went to a scare fest in a theme park. They built this big house and there was a guy that had a chainsaw and he stood on the other side of the hallway. He started chasing me and my friends. I was glad I had clean pants that day."
Wow.
"I want to thank you for all the podcasts you make. I listen to them every day on my way to work. Yes, even the 420 episode." "Much love from the Netherlands." Martin, thank you so much for enjoying the show, even our 420 episode.
Yep.
So, chased with a chainsaw.
Too spooky.
Which, out of context, is scary as fuck, if you think about it. I was chased with a fucking chainsaw.
All right. It's true. It's... Go ahead.
Okay.
Speaking of dicks.
Speaking of dicks, next email comes for us. Hey, this is actually kind of fitting. Aroto Tomato.
Oh, God.
Who says, "I mean, I could talk about the one time my father tried to choke my mom in the kitchen during a fight, but that's probably not the kind of scariest moment you're looking for. Let's go with a more nicer story. So I went on a vacation trip with some friends and family. I was a teenager at the time, and we were all sleeping in a van. The trip itself was fine. We arrived, had fun, came back. Except I wasn't in the van. You see, we were supposed to return to the van at exactly noon. I thought it was 3 p.m., so by the time I got back from a place I decided to go by on my own, everyone was gone. There's that minute of, haha, it's probably fine, maybe they moved the van somewhere, and then you realize, oh, they moved the van to another state." So there I was, sitting in a chair at the zoo, trying not to freak out, then paranoia sets in. I start to see all these random people passing by like they always do, but now everyone is looking at me. Look at this kid all by himself. Is he lost? Can I take advantage? Rob him? Stab him? Rob him and stab him for fun?
Wow.
Those were the things going through my mind. Any noise coming from behind me scared me shitless. I look back and it's just kids playing. Someone sits by my side. I get scared. Someone looks at me for a second. I got scared. It's now 5 p.m. Holy shit, it's getting dark. Mind you, I had no phone at the time and too stupid to consider maybe asking someone for theirs and no coins for a public phone. Again, being stupid didn't help. Walk out of the zoo, down the street, and two stray dogs start barking at me. I try walking far away from them, ready to kick if I need to. They follow me for a bit, but give up. I think maybe the van people will notice I'm gone, so I should stay put. But I was the only one in the trip without any relatives. Who knows if other parents will even notice? Go back to the zoo. It's nighttime now. The zoo isn't closed, but holy shit, there's only one. I'm the only one there, it feels. I sit near the parking spots where the van was. And then, in the words of Eric Estrada, there he is, the van comes back. Only took them fucking forever. The parents apologize, the driver too. I fall asleep immediately in my seat, wake up several hours later, and I'm home safe. To crown the adventure, my mom was asked to pay for the extra gasoline used.
Wow, that's awful.
Holy shit. P.S. about the whole dad choking my mom thing, she's fine. Restraining orders are dope.
Damn.
So, left at a zoo. That is crazy.
That is. And then they made his mom pay. What assholes. They should have done a head count before they left.
Seriously, no shit.
That's like one of my nightmares, though. Number one got left once at a basketball game. It wasn't very far. And, like, they just barely gotten maybe 2 or 3 miles up the road before they realized what had happened. So,
jeez. I was left alone in a theme park for maybe, I don't know, 5 minutes, and I freaked out like crazy, and then they found me. And that's my closest story. But next email goes to Talos167, who says, "Dear SML Podcast, when I was at Disney World at the age of 7, I was accidentally separated from my parents during one of the park's parades. I had to navigate my way around a very rambunctious crowd to find them. I was on my own for about 15 minutes. It was the scariest moment of my life." So lots of us were left at theme parks.
I was never left anywhere. What the hell were you guys doing?
Being children.
Okay, I wasn't a normal kid, so I concede.
All right, next email is from Dark Mika's on Fire, so of course this is going to be a read. She says, "Yeah, bitches, it's on. I'm probably going to lose, but whatever. Got to be in it to win it, you know? Anyways, my story. Shit, this is almost as old as the first one. Some background first. I live in southern Indiana. My grandparents used to live in Kentucky. Hey! Every holiday, they would throw giant feasts, and the whole family would go over and eat dinner together and catch up and all that jazz. I also stayed with them most weekends as well. To get from Indiana to Kentucky, you have to cross a bridge because of the river. That's where the story takes place. Exposition ain't it grand. Anyways, I was probably 8 or 9, maybe something like that. We had dropped by a Dairy Queen for a blizzard for me. Fucking love them to this day. And we're heading across the bridge to my grandparents' house. I believe for a holiday meal, but I'm not 100% sure anymore since my stepfather wasn't with us. Usually he only missed a couple. We were going across the bridge. Traffic isn't slow, but not as fast as it usually is because it's holiday time and cold out, so roads are so-so. I was looking down into my ice cream because, well, kid plus ice cream equals full attention." Obviously. "Suddenly, we slam to a stop, skidding just a little bit. I nearly lose my blizzard, which is blasphemy in and of itself. Start to look up, and we're yanked around again. My blizzard hits the nasty-ass floor of the car upside down, because why the fuck would it not do that exactly? Then we're jerked about again and again. My mind being a child isn't really focused on anything but the ice cream and trying to figure out what the hell just happened, because none of it made any sense to me. Mom checks to make sure I'm okay, even though my head and neck hurts from being jerked around, and my shoulder hurts from the seatbelt I'm more focused on. Of course, my blizzard." Oh, Jesus, the blizzard. "Mom, lover, she was already used to me being a bit off, so she was like, 'Well, pick it up then. Don't let it get all over the floor,' which I do. I start eating again, content. Sad that some of it spilled onto the floor, such a waste. I wanted to eat that stuff. I don't think I even checked to see if there was anything nasty in the ice cream I was eating. Turns out we skidded to a stop to avoid plowing into a car in front of us that skidded to a stop. That alone almost made me lose my ice cream. But then we were hit by the car behind us that didn't stop fast enough, and that piled up a few cars, which eventually caused us to slam into the car in front of us. The airbags never deployed. Yay, fucking cars. The car was totaled. Usually I sit in the back seat because my stepdad is usually in the car. The back seats were crumpled a bit. The tail end of the car was destroyed. The front end was pretty bad off, too. But neither of us were really all that hurt. Had I been sitting in the back, though, I'd have needed emergency care or I'd have died either way. I was more focused on my ice cream and then later on enjoying sitting in front of the ambulance with my ice cream."
Oh, my God.
"I'm fat. Ice cream always mattered to me, even back then." Oh, Jesus. "In the end, we found that the guy in front that we hit, thanks to all those behind smashing into us, he stopped because the guy in front of him had hit something slick and braked as their car went out of control. Ironically, that car, the one responsible for all of this, fucking fine. 100% A-O fucking K. In the end, Mom had to slam into her door a few times to get it open. I had to climb out through her side because my door wouldn't open anymore. Car was totaled, and I would guess taken to the junkyard straight from the bridge. Cops gave us a ride the rest of the way to my grandparents. After we were there, my mom called my stepdad because this was before cell phones existed. So yeah, I almost died that day, and all I cared about was my ice cream. How depressing is that? For anyone wondering about the car, it was a small Ford car. I think it was a Thunderbird. Also, I don't like bridges or cars anymore." Good Lord.
Ice cream is delicious.
Car wreck. Lost ice cream. All right, next email from John Powers, who says, "I don't know if this counts as spooky per se, but it's the closest thing to having a spooky story. I was on vacation with my family a few years ago at a rental house in Michigan. This rental house was used as a hospital during World War II, which was a little spooky when you think of the fact that the master bedroom is where the surgeries took place. Anyway, I slept in the basement, which originally was used as a sick ward of sorts. I remember clear as day being woke up by who I thought was my mother. She said, "It's time to get up," and I felt a nudge from behind me. When I get out of bed, I went upstairs and asked why she woke me up. Suffice to say, nobody in the house woke me up. Ooh. Weirds me out to this day if it was an actual ghost or of a nurse who worked there or something else that's easily explainable. Awoken by a ghost.
Too spooky.
That's a creepy one.
Yeah.
All right. Next one is from my buddy Chris Serrani, a.k.a. Flick. And he's got another long one. So, god damn you people. I get a drink of water.
Remember all those times you're like, man, nobody writes in anything good. They don't send enough to read. Bet you regret it now.
Hey, it gives us free content, so whatever. True. I just end up losing my voice a bit.
If you're going to listen to this fucking show, you're going to contribute to it.
Yeah. God damn it. Anyway, Flick says, I'm caught between two scary moments, so I'll have to defer to the one that that takes place in an old tuberculosis hospital. I used to get together with a friend on weekends when he had access to an old TB hospital that was later converted and used for general purposes. The place was run down, essentially abandoned, but had a caretaker and electricity. Nearly all electricity was shut down except for the area that the caretaker lived in, which was near where my friend and his girlfriend had their cabin, which was the old gift shop of the hospital. Anyway, we'd go there on weekends and I stayed the night multiple times. They had a bed and table and some lights set up in that old gift shop, which had windows facing into what used to be the main hallway entrance. One weekend we stayed there for two nights. Bear in mind, it's literally just the three of us and the caretaker you'd never really see in this big old hospital. So there's no one else around to mess with you. Now, I was never a true believer in ghosts or any of the paranormal stuff, so I wasn't exactly freaked out to be staying there. My friends did tell me about experiences they had there, but never having experienced much of the sort in my life, I didn't think about it much. Ooh, I can only wonder where this is going.
I just want to say, he gets a plus one for me already because I'm a tuberculosis carrier.
Is there anything you don't have?
Good health.
Okay. Oh, God. Friday night, my friends are asleep, and I'm on the floor in my sleeping bag trying to fall asleep myself. The hospital is quiet, considering basically no power. My ears start hearing doors on the other floors occasionally slamming. No worries there. The doors aren't latched, and all the windows are open, so hey, things move around. Then a hand scraped the top of my sleeping bag right over my head. I laid there for a moment, absolutely motionless, and after a few seconds, I throw the top of my sleeping bag up, grab my flashlight, and look around. Nothing. My friends are both asleep on the bed, and there's nothing near me that could have possibly touched me. I sit there thinking about what happened, and I know what I heard and what I felt. Something had just messed with me. I laid back down, eventually dozed off. In the morning, I'd be told by my friends that since I was new, I was being tested. Interesting. Saturday night, I was still feeling okay about things. We stayed up a while and chatted a bunch before we all turned in. My friends slept again as I checked on my phone before eventually getting tired. Dozed off for a bit before waking up, while later to a rhythmic tapping sound next to my head. I was sleeping right next to the hallway windows of the room, which had plastic film over them to help with insulating in the winter. Tapping sounded like it was the plastic film. I listened for a while and it went on and on. In my mind, I thought it could be a mouse that somehow got in between the windows and the film. Finally got to me, so I grabbed my flashlight in my sleeping bag with me, of course, flip up my sleeping bag, and shine a light on the window. Nothing. The tapping immediately stopped. And I saw no mouse or anything that would have been making the sound. I sat there and thought, damn it, is this for real? Laid back down, put my sleeping bag over my head again, and tried to doze off. Only a few minutes had passed as I laid there when, scrape, the hand scratched over the top of my head again. I snapped straight upright in a flash. I looked around the room again and chuckled to myself. I never believed much in the paranormal, but there was no denying what I was experiencing. As frightening and nerve-wracking as it was, there was a sense of awe to it all. Perhaps this is what others sometimes experience. Maybe you really don't see ghosts and such, but more so feel and hear the little things they have the energy to do. Anyway, that was one of the more scary moments of my life. Ghost Cat is a close second, but that's another story for another drawing.
You're gonna leave shit. Me on edge like that. That was a good one.
I'm just writing scrape.
I'm writing like full-fledged paragraphs from what you're saying, making legit notes, and then like I have a scoring system going on to the side here.
Yeah.
I'm the unprepared one.
Ooh, Awesome Prime is hosting us for 4 viewers, so 4 more people get to listen into these scary stories.
Ooh, spooky. Thanks.
Thank you for the host, by the way. So let's see. that was a really good one. I hope they heard good. That one. Oh, shit. These are getting good. All right, next email from Mo M, who says, I live in Florida. I'm terrified of sharks, and my sisters know this. I don't even like going to the beach, but they were visiting from out of town, so I took them and they convinced me to go swimming. While in the water, they started humming the Jaws theme song, and not 30 seconds later, I kicked something below me. I don't know if it was a shark, but the three of us felt something below us. I've never swam faster to the shore and haven't been in the ocean since. I'm trembling just thinking about it. So there you have it. Scariest moment of my life. Shark? Question mark. Awesome Prime with 25 biddies as well. Look at that.
Oh, yeah. That reminded me.
Thank you, Awesome.
That was awesome. Thank you.
That was awesome. From Awesome.
Terrible.
I know. Next email's from James Parker, who says, the scariest thing that's happened to me so far was getting mobilized and sent to Iraq back in 2003. Didn't know what would happen going into combat. Damn, that's some real life shit.
Who was that?
James Parker. Sent to Iraq in 2003. That's some real life shit.
That is scary shit.
Eternal Rage just donated 200 biddies. Look at you.
What a bitch.
Seriously.
I forgot I had them. I've been holding on to them all week.
Sweet. I'll take them. I will take your $2 gladly.
You can have my biddies. They're actually Twitch RPGs $2 because I did a survey and they gave me 5.
Twitch RPG?
Yeah, you do surveys and they give you biddies. So I don't pay for bits. I scrape together what they give me.
Nice.
Surprise.
All right. Next email is from BX Latino Heat, who says, good evening to the SML podcast. I'd like to share a very true ghostly encounter I had living in my parents' apartment before they moved into their new home. Every night, I had an odd feeling in my bedroom and always felt I was being watched, but thought nothing of it. At night, I would wake up in the middle of the night like I was being awoken by someone. And one night I was awoken and actually thought I was still asleep. That's when my horror began. My bedsheets were being pulled off me by a tall, dark, ghostly figure. At that very moment, I was terrified. I immediately pulled the covers over my face and body, but to my amazement, it was tugging at my feet and began pulling off the bedsheets again. At this point, I was awake and shitting in my pants. I heard a voice saying, get out of my house. I then looked up and saw a tall man in a suit pointing at me saying, get out now, in a very creepy voice. I immediately called my parents and the lights were turned on and he disappeared. I told my parents my encounter and they told me that a mortician had lived there years ago and passed away. And before they moved in, someone mentioned it was haunted. 2 weeks later, my parents decided to move. My dad bought our house and I was relieved. Thanks so much to the SML podcast and everyone else for hearing my ghostly encounter. Damn.
That's spooky.
Ghost mortician. That's creepy.
That's like the worst kind of ghost, because that's a ghost who spent his whole goddamn life dealing with the dead already, and now he's dead. And you're just going to be pissed at that. Because, you know, they're sitting on the other side watching their own autopsy like, that bitch didn't sew me up right.
Son of a bitch. That's what they're dressing me in?
I mean, that's got to be the worst. Like, have to watch your own autopsy and funeral prep and, like, be scrutinizing it because you were good at it in your life and they're not.
And then scare the shit out of kids who are just trying to sleep.
I mean, he was trying to sleep. He was asking for it.
True. All right. Next email is from Casey S, who says, the scariest moment of my life was when you were driving and was when I guess I was driving in August a couple years ago, but it says you. Driving in August a couple years ago, it was dusk out and I was going down the road I took to my left and look back to the road, and I see a couple of deer crossing the road. I hit my brakes, so luckily no one was behind me or in front of me, but I was inches away from hitting them if I didn't brake. I was shaking so badly I had to pull over and process what just happened. Almost hitting deer sucks.
Hitting deer here is just like...
dinner?
Like a weekly thing. I'm not gonna say we haven't done it. We have rules, though. If it dies from the impact, we don't eat it.
Why?
But if it's just injured, because, like, I don't know, it just feels weird to eat one that you killed with the impact. And no, it's just a mental thing. Although a lot of people, and we've done it before, like donate the meat if that happens. There's not particularly anything wrong with it. It's just that it's just I can't bring myself to eat total roadkill. But like if it's injured and can't run or something, then put it out of its misery. And then, hey, it's fair game. Literally fair game. So.
Womp womp.
It was bad pun. We had to add one.
Yeah. All right. Next email is from Billy P, who says, I have a tale to share. While maybe not the scariest out of all the entries, this one is quite horrifying. One that many might have also witnessed. Let me set the scene. It was late. It was dark. I was alone. There was an odd breeze in the air. Made me feel a bit uncomfortable. Nothing happened that night, though. The true horror I experienced was a couple of days later. Of course, it was when I first listened to the SML podcast. It was another podcast to listen to. Nothing spooky at first, but then the horror. Joe let it slip that he doesn't like the acronym LOL. The concept alone sent shivers down my spine. Even recollecting this memory, trembling as I type, I very well may be on the verge of throwing up. Truly terrifying stuff. I also didn't win the giveaway that day, which also added to the horror.
Joey monster.
Joe hates LOL. Thank you, Billy. That I needed a good laugh. There were some some tense ones there, so it was good to get a nice breather, I guess. Next one is from Chris 35710, who says, my scariest moment, enjoying my quiet time and taking a hot shower when I reached for the shampoo and a huge cockroach was there. I ran smack into the glass shower door and bumped every wall just trying to escape while screaming for my life. I'm sure I peed a little too.
Fear pee. Although I don't know if fear pee counts when it's just over a cockroach, guys. Like, it's just a bug.
It was an unexpected cockroach.
Are cockroaches ever expected, though?
Yeah, sometimes. I worked for a rental company, so yes, cockroaches are sometimes expected.
Okay, fair trade.
Next email is from Leon Claymore, who says, I was at a party with some friends until one of them decided to have one too many drinks and pick a fight with another group of dangerous individuals. We tried to contain the situation, but the danger group was out of their minds. One of them had a knife and tried to use it, but was quickly disarmed. In the meantime, I was throwing a few punches, but almost got choked to death. I could feel the veins in my neck stop pumping blood to my head. It felt like, and the guy wasn't stopping, but security arrived and kicked them out since they looked like the fire starters. But if they took one more minute, I'd be dead. And that was the one moment I could think of where it felt like it might end. Damn. So almost choked to death.
Don't deal with, like, hooligans and bad people.
Yeah.
Stay home and listen to the podcast instead. Then you don't die. And you might win a giveaway.
You might. Well, technically, everyone's winning something. So.
See? Win-win.
Next email is from David P., who says, the scariest moment that happened to me when I was driving my son home one night and a driver did not stop at the crossroads and hit our car broadside. Looked over at my son and he was covered in red liquid. I immediately thought it was blood, but then remembered we just stopped at 7-Eleven and bought cherry Slurpees. Thankfully, everyone was fine. My father also had a horror situation. He worked for TWA Airlines, and there was a plane crash on a mountain in Loudoun County, Virginia. He and a few guys from his work were asked to enter the plane and collect the black box. When he went in, he saw the people were still buckled in their seats, dead, and some were decapitated. He told me he turned around and left and said the job was not worth what he saw. Damn.
Can I interrupt with a relevant story to that?
Sure.
D used to be on the fire department here. One of the calls that he had to work was a guy who had a heart attack in his car and drove up under the back end of a stopped school bus. I'll let you guess what happened to his head.
Oh.
But it was David's job to fish it out of the back seat.
Oh, God.
Yeah, because here, the firefighters are first responders, so they do everything. The EMT and cleanup, like he had to deal. One of the first calls he went on after he joined the department was a 22-year-old had flipped a tractor over on himself while he was bush hogging.
Oh, God.
And I don't know if it, you know, for anybody that doesn't know what a bush hog is, it's literally like a giant lawnmower deck that you pull behind a tractor. And so when the kid flipped the tractor, I say kid, he was 22, but it flipped him off and the bush hog ran over him and cut him in half.
Ah.
Yeah. And that's only like two of the hundreds of stories that D could tell while he was on the fire department.
God damn.
Yeah. It's a gruesome job that people, like, it's one of those things that we kind of take for granted. We think, oh, firefighters put out the fire. And it's like, no, they also dig your head out of your car when you get decapitated after you run up under a school bus. Yeah, I remember him coming home that night and I had to wash the blood out of his uniforms, his turnout gear. It was horrible.
Damn.
Yeah. Anyway, carry on.
All right. Next email is from Nathan Ashton, who says, evening, Joe. Sorry, this might be a bit long. Going to condense it the best I can. Yeah, it's a kind of long one. So years ago, I managed a local dive restaurant in my town. 3 years of cooking, 10 years of management, decent job, but the only downside was late nights during the summer. Some nights I would get out at 1 a.m. only to have to be back by 6 a.m. to unload the weekly truck. That was booty cheeks. Okay, that's a good one. Booty cheeks. Summers were full of tourists coming in late and right before close trying to order a late night snack. No problem, except one night we had a group that from the moment they stepped into the restaurant gave me an uneasy feeling, and I never get that feeling regardless of whomever it may be. I decided to ring them up so we could get them out. That way we could close up and lock the doors. We closed at 10 that night and they walked in at 9:58. Happened more than I liked, if I'm being honest. So as I'm ringing them up, they start asking a few questions, first about the menu, then about the equipment in the restaurant, and finally about our staffing. I found that to be a bit out of the ordinary and tried to divert their questions and talk about our food. Didn't quite work. I placed their order, took their money, gave them their change, and had them wait at the window while we boxed up their food to go. I noticed they were waiting for their food to be handed over to them. They began to walk around a bit and in a way scope the interior out. Maybe they found all the taxidermy, walleye, and perch on the wall interesting, or maybe they were up to something more sinister. I handed off their food and told them to have a good night and enjoy the food. They appreciated the comments and head out the door and took off out of our parking lot. Finally, we could close up, clean up, and get the hell out of there. My nightly duty as a manager was to count our drawer and make sure we weren't short cash and that all of our credit card transactions were in order for the owner in the morning when he comes by, takes the cash and deposits it to the bank. Summer days at the restaurant, we would easily do 10,000 in sales. Usually there'd be close to 4,500 cash sales and the remaining in credit card or gift cards. While the staff cleaned and took out all the trash out the back door, I counted my drawers, finalized credit sales, and bundled everything together to get ready to be placed into the safe for safekeeping. As I finish up my drawers, I hear the back door slam open and the staff come running inside, thinking they were horsing around like they usually do. No biggie, I was wrong. The last cashier came walking in with two guys. One had a knife pointed at her chest while the other had a hand in his pocket saying he had a gun and wouldn't be afraid to use it. It was easy to recognize that this was the group from earlier that ordered right before we closed. I wasn't willing to lose my life, so I bent down, opened the safe that was unlocked at the time, and prepared to hand over the bag of cash. As I bent down, they let go of the girl and rushed to me, one holding me down and the other kicking and punching me while he grabbed the bag of cash. Staff wasn't sure what to do, so they stood there in horror while watching. That's probably what I would do, too. Thankfully, once they got the cash, they bolted out the back door and out into the parking lot. Staff called the cops while I laid on the ground bloody and just come to find out badly bruised ribs. Cops arrived minutes later without any luck in finding them, and sadly, we did not have cameras at the time. Lucky them. I had nightmares for weeks and hated working nights after that. That's the first kind of robbery in which someone was hurt in our area in a long while. Not sure if they were local or tourists, but they were never caught. A few months after that, I put in my 2 weeks and started working at a retina clinic. Haven't been back to the restaurant since. Some may call me a coward for not fighting back or fighting for my staff. I think I made the best choice for everyone. Who knows if they even had a gun? If they didn't, we could have overpowered them and possibly held them until the police arrived. But what if they really did? Then what?
I like to say, bitch, my name is not Enrique and I cannot be your hero.
Yeah. Jesus Ninja. So, damn. That's a tough one.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Next email is from our friend Pernell Vaughn, who says, I received my first student loan invoice. Ah!
That'll do it.
Truly, the most scary thing to ever happen to me? Well, outside of traditional things like a car breaking down or anticipation of a bill, I think the scariest thing to ever happen to me would range between a childhood story and an adult story. You can either choose a specific one or read them both. Well, I guess I'm fucking reading them. Or should I pick one or read them both?
I like to make you suffer, because that's friendship.
All right, so childhood first. On one Halloween night, my cousins and I were walking around a suburban neighborhood collecting candy. None of us actually lived in said neighborhood, and we were walking there from a relative's place that lived in a nearby neighborhood. I may have been about 6 or 7 at the time. We walked up to a peculiar house that had lights on the porch with a pumpkin basket labeled Take One. There were dolls and ornaments strewn about the porch. Suffice to say, one of my cousins was a jerk and took a huge handful of candy. As he pulled his hand back, a Freddy Krueger doll rose up from a nearby chair and yelled, "It said Take One, give that candy back now." We yelled and screamed and took off running. The Krueger man gave chase and we sprinted off into the night. During the chase, we split up in order to make our escape. Unfortunately, this also resulted in me being alone and lost in this weird neighborhood on Halloween night. On one hand, I was scared. On the other hand, I had recently watched the Garfield Halloween special and had one thing on my mind, candy, candy, candy. I wandered the neighborhood scared and alone, but still knocking on doors and collecting candy as I wandered around hoping to find my way back to familiar territory. That never happened. Instead, my mother and my aunt ended up driving around the neighborhood in a panic search for me. They found me at around 11:30, still wandering and trick-or-treating.
Pronounce the reason that we have trick-or-treat times designated for us now.
Pretty much. All right, adult story. Not really a story so much as an experience. When I was in college, I went hiking along a Virginia hiking trail called McAfee Knob with some college friends. As an inner city guy, I'd never gone hiking in the wilderness, so this was all new territory for me. We had a bit of a late start, but got onto the trail and everything seemed to be going well. Hiked all the way to the top, took pictures, basked in the glory of nature. Unfortunately, we started down way too late in the sunset before we could reach the bottom. We could barely see where we were going. The terrain was not very safe and I was not comfortable in the woods at night. Too many horror movies. And he's a black guy, so he should be scared. Horror movies. At one point, my roommate almost fell off the trail into a pretty deep ditch, but I ended up catching him. At one point, we stumbled across a campsite and a pair of men were sitting around a fire while eating beans. We explained our plight to them and they offered to let us crash at the campsite with them overnight. The other guys were considering, but I got really panicky about the idea in my head. Not sure that was due to stuff in the dark piled up that I couldn't see, but the fact that these guys were creepy strangers or horror films in general, but I wasn't down for this. Out of nowhere, I blurt out probably the most racially stereotypical thing that I could have said. "We much appreciate the offer, guys, but Kentucky Fried Chicken closes at 10, and I really want me some honey barbecue wings, so we gotta go." God damn it, Purnell. In the end, we managed to make our way back down the pass, and it wasn't until sometime after 10 p.m. there were no wings consumed on that evening.
They didn't even get the wings. That's the real horror. They didn't even
get the wings.
Like, once honey barbecue wings are mentioned, then fuck it. You just have to have them. Also, now, I'm going to send David to town and be like, "I know I already made a giant pot of chili, but bitch, we need some honey barbecue wings right now."
I didn't notice while I was reading, No Time dropped 250 biddies. So we're getting all the biddies tonight.
Lovely people.
Well, mostly.
You know.
You donated too, so.
I'm not lovely. I'm an asshole.
All right, next email is from Brian Martinez, who says, "When I was a kid, I'd always be playing baseball in my backyard. I had a bad habit of hitting the ball over and into my neighbor's yard. They were always nice enough to throw them back over. I never dared to go into their yard because they had a fairly new German Shepherd pup. It was like a year old, but not really trained yet. It was a bit wild, but still big in size. One day, I hit my last wiffle ball over my neighbor's yard. My neighbors weren't home that day, so that was my last wiffle ball. I could see it plainly in sight in the middle of their yard. Their dog was a distance away sleeping. I figure maybe I could hop over really fast, get it, and get out, and the dog will never notice. I decided to go for it. Feeling nervous, trying to be as quiet as possible, I climb the fence. It makes a bit of noise, but not that loud, in my neighbor's yard. I inch closer and closer. I'm 5 feet away from it. Then I see the dog bolting right at me. Oh, God. My heart sank to the goddamn floor. I swear I moved faster than the fucking flash, and I got the ball, jumped the fence, and as I got to the fence, the dog got a hold of my shoelace for a split second, but it wasn't enough to pull me back. I just got over, thought I was going to die by a dog. 10 minutes later, the neighbors get home."
They made almost a movie out of that.
Eaten by dog. All right. Next one is from John Prudlow, another long one, who says, hello, SML podcast. Are you ready to hear something spine-chilling and gruesome? You unlock a door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension, a dimension of sound, a dimension of sight, a dimension of mind. You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the Twilight Zone. What an intro. The scariest moment of my life happened almost 2 years ago. It was one of those moments in life that often play out as a pivot point and change a whole paradigm. If you don't appreciate the advances that have been made in medical science, then consider this story and be grateful for each day that you get up out of bed. It was a chilly winter day that... That came out perfectly. It was a chilly winter day that slowly warmed well above freezing. The warmer air was enough to melt some of the recent snowfall. I'd recently picked up a new lease car and was excited about driving it with that new car smell while I broke it in. After a quick lunch with my brother and my dad, I headed back up north to my place and my new ride. It was just before Christmas. I wanted to stop and buy some groceries on the way home so that I could settle in for a couple days and hibernate a bit. A long winter nap with some food, booze, and video games, if you will. I noticed it starting to snow as I headed home. After a quick stop to load up on a few goodies, I made the short drive down the road to my apartment. The snow was starting to pick up now, and I wanted to get inside before it got messy. As I started back up towards my garage, a thought occurred to me. You see, that morning, I knew I would be transferring some items out of the old car I was trading in for my new car. So in a moment of haste, I grabbed several items, including my garage key, out of the car and put them in my apartment upstairs. Realizing this, I shut off my car, got out, and ran around towards the entrance to my building, and then it happened. An ice patch. Oh no.
Oh.
The snow on the roof had melted earlier in the day, ran down the gutter drain, spilled onto the parking lot, and froze again. The newly fallen snow had covered this wicked layer of black ice. In the blink of an eye, but what also seemed like forever, my body was twisted around 90 degrees, and I fell with my leg tucked under me. All at once, I heard and felt the crack of bone as I went down. Oh shit.
Oh, too real, too real. Make it stop.
Laying there in pain and shock, I tried to gather my thoughts and understand what just happened. The adrenaline rush was enough to anesthetize most of the pain for the moment, but as I lay there on the cold ground in a puddle of ice and snow, I saw my leg lying flat on the ground, and my foot also lying flat with the sole of my shoe facing down, pointed almost 90 degrees from where my leg was aimed. In a moment of panic and confusion, I reached over and grabbed my foot and quite literally reattached it to the rest of my leg. I cried out for help to anyone who could hear me in earshot, but there was no one around. The streets were quiet, and all I could hear was the sound of the wind through this falling snow. At this point, there was so much fear and disillusionment. God, you were using so many big words. Look at you. What had I done? Was this a dream? Would I ever walk again? I crawled over to my new car and managed to pull myself up to brace my knee from my good leg up on the passenger seat. Maybe the situation was somehow better than what I had just felt, witnessed, and experienced. So I decided to test my foot and leg by stepping on the ground and putting weight on it. Oh, immediately my tibia bone came down over the side of my foot and almost touched the ground had I not let up whilst howling in pain. Knowing that I needed to get inside and get some kind of medical attention, I pulled out my phone and dialed my neighbor. Fortunate enough for me, she was home and shortly opened her garage door and let me into her apartment. I called my parents, who drove me to the hospital over an hour later. The surgeon on call took some x-rays and after a long examination explained the injury with the metaphor of twisting a stick to break it. It was a trimalar fracture of my ankle. I have no idea if I said that word right.
Oh, man.
A trimalar fracture of my ankle. The malleus bones shifted over in the break and tore a couple ligaments in the process. The day after Christmas, I went into surgery. I would not be able to drive my new car and would have to move in with my parents for the next couple of months since my apartment was on a second floor. In the spirit of SMLOween, I can honestly say that the inside of my fibula looks like something out of a Frankenstein movie with the plate and all the screws that are drilled in there. But I am lucky to live in this day and age. Over 100 years ago, I would have, at the very least, needed a splint and probably wouldn't have even been able to walk again at all. Instead, the bones healed enough to walk and jog on my own within 7 or 8 weeks. That cold day in December was the scariest moment of my life. Hope you enjoyed my telling of it.
No, I didn't. I didn't. My knee. I'm having flashbacks.
I just wrote severely fucked up leg.
Oh, God. Too soon.
We are down to the final five. The next one is from DJ Infine, who says, "Hi ho, my scariest moment in my life was last year. Come home from work at Halloween and nobody's home. I do what I do after work, go to the shower, into the kitchen, then I'll go to living room a little bit playing with my Xbox, but then my wife, son, and my daughter open the door as the dead, a little witch, and a monster from outside screaming so loud that I run outside the living room and whoa, what was that? Help, my heart, that was so intense. Thanks for the chance, and you and your family a great Halloween." Though his own family scared the shit out of him.
I like that family.
Scary family. All right, next one is from S. Archer, who says, "One of my scariest moments was a few years ago. I was home alone and sick, so I was bundled up on the sofa watching a film, something with Nicolas Cage, though I can't remember what," which is, you know, important information in this story.
Yeah, I mean, it's big difference if you're watching, like, what's that one where they escape? Is it Escape from L.A. or something like that? Con Air! Yeah, it's a big difference if you're, like, watching Con Air or if you're watching, like, the Babadook.
Anyway, it was around 10 at night when there was a sudden knock on the window. Naturally, I was scared and didn't want to go check it out. I'd seen enough horror movies, so I peeked out the window. There was my friend who decided to come completely unannounced. It spooked me a lot, but let her in, and she ended up watching me on Skyward Sword. But yeah, that was pretty scary. I did get spooked too coming home once, and there was a kid. They went down a driveway, and as I went past, they were gone, despite there being a locked gate. So maybe it was a ghost. I don't know.
Ghost kids are scary. Like, I can handle a lot of ghostly bad shit happening, but once you start pulling kids into it, I'm like, yep, done. Bye.
Yeah. All right, next one is from John Harvey, who says, "Happy Halloween, you bunch of spooky bastards. I've always been interested in the supernatural. Ghosts, demons, monsters, all that stuff fascinates me. Now, when I say fascinates, I mean in the same way I'm fascinated with comic book characters or Star Wars or something. I love the stories, characters, and lore of something like Marvel, but at no point did I ever believe that Spider-Man was actually swinging through Manhattan." Really? I did.
I mean, he's not.
"My friend, however, was a whole other kettle of fish. His mom was one of those new age earth mothers, always clutching a crystal and smelling of Yaling or Yalang or Jojo Ba or some shit. Anyway, she would go on about the spirits and negative energy in the house. She had the kid convinced that there was a ghost living there. They called it the mother and would attribute every little creak, bump, or weird experience to her actions. One day I came over to play. We ran around, played soldiers, and eventually crashed in front of the TV. After a while, the older sister came home from school and, taking off her jacket, walked into the living room. 'You two could put things back when you're done with them,' she said, moving a wooden stool from the middle of the room back against the wall. 'It wasn't us, Sharon.' We'll call her Sharon for this. 'It wasn't us, Sharon. We've been watching telly all day,' her brother protested. 'Ah, who else could it have been?' snapped back Sharon dismissively. And that's when the Earth Mother chimes in. 'It's the mother spirit, Sharon. She just wants to sit with the kids, protect them and the family, and she's a protective spirit.' Sharon, who is older and obviously a bit sick of her ma, quickly told her to stop being stupid. God. This led to a bit of a shouting match, the mom saying she moves the chair to be close to the family. She explained how this always happened, especially when kids are around, and she moves it to the middle of the room right next to where everyone is sitting, then started listing all the times this has supposedly happened. Sharon ended up doing the old whatever, mom, and walked into her room, slamming the door shut. Anyway, a few days later, I'm back and we're watching TV. When Sharon came running through the front door, 'Holy shit,' she said, 'wait till you hear this.' Turns out Sharon, sick of her mom's stupidity, had gone and done some research, hoping she could find something to convince her mom that the house wasn't haunted. Instead, she found some old newspaper clippings regarding a family who lived there years ago. The father had been killed in the war, the mother being left with two small kids, kids she couldn't provide for. She must have worried about how she'd be able to protect them and came to the conclusion that heaven would be a better place for them. She gave them a glass of milk laced with rat poison and then hung herself. The article included a rather grisly picture of the crime scene. Where we had been sitting before watching television was a couch. Laying upon this were two children dead from poison, and in the middle of the room, hanging from a beam, was the mother. Beneath her, kicked over and lying on its side, a wooden stool. A wooden stool that would have been in the middle of the room before she kicked it over. Had the ghost been reenacting the last day of her life trapped in an ever-ending cycle? Or had Earth Mother heard this story and woven some truth into her BS tapestry? You be the judge. Good luck, everyone. Have a spooky Halloween."
BS tapestry is my new favorite thing.
I'll just put the mother. Damn, that was a good one.
I can confirm that mothers are scary.
All right. Next one is from our friend Jacob Garner, who got his in right on time. We got two of them that were like right after 8 o'clock. But considering this was originally supposed to go till 9, I'm letting them slide.
Okay.
So Jacob Garner writes in, righto, so I actually have two video games that scared the bejesus out of me, the Doom Clone Alien Trilogy, based on the series when it was just a trilogy, despite Alien Resurrection coming out like a year later, but I digress, and the first-person horror title Condemned Criminal Origins. Alien Trilogy was basic enough. I used to stay at my Aunt Peggy's for the first weekend of every August every summer because there was a toy-slash-auto-slash-craft show that we would go to. I'd blow all the money I'd saved over the year and come back with tons of Star Wars, Star Trek, and Aliens toys I could get my hands on. She also showed me the first two Alien movies since I'd caught Alien 3 on TNT. Mind you, I was about 12 or 13, so Alien and Aliens blew my mind. She was also like, hey, your cousin bought the Alien Trilogy game for PC, you can play it whenever you want. I had watched my dad play Doom, and I remember playing the demo for Descent whenever we would be in a computer store, but the Alien Trilogy was possibly my first M-rated first-person shooter I'd ever played. They had everything, the Xenomorphs, the facehuggers, etc. One of the gameplay mechanics was you had to use the scanner so you could see what was coming for you, and you'd actually hear the Xenomorphs even if you couldn't see them. Made for some nice atmosphere, along with facehuggers that would frequently pop out of the vents in the walls. So during the first weekend I was playing this, I was easily up until 2 to 3 a.m. playing this game nonstop, despite sucking as I was figuring out how everything worked. Possibly the latest I'd ever stayed up at that point. Now my aunt's house is ranch style, and it's essentially one big hallway with the rooms jutting off the sides. The computer room was on one end of the couch, so I was sleeping on the other end. It's 2 or 3 in the morning. I was tired as hell, and I couldn't find any of the light switches. So there I am, trying to make my way down a dark hallway, groping for doorways and trying to find a light switch, and I am so damn sure I'm hearing this alien growl. And it doesn't help that there were vents everywhere, and I was afraid that the facehuggers were coming. You know that age when you're old enough to know it's not real, but still scared shitless that it might be real. Eventually, I found my way to the couch and hid under the blankets for the rest of the night, but that's how Alien Trilogy scared the shit out of me. And it looks like I don't have time to type the other. Cheers.
I'm sad because Condemned was one of my first horror games once I started playing games again. And so I wanted to hear what scared him, but...
Nice.
I remember waiting forever to get it, too, because we had the rule that we don't buy games unless we're both going to play it. And D won't play a horror game to save himself. He won't watch a horror movie or nothing. And so I like had to wait forever until I caught it on sale at like GameStop for like $1.50. And it was worth it.
Anyway, we got one final email, and this is from your buddy Studa.
Studa!
Who said, there was a time when I was around 8 years old when a few of my cousins and I went into the cow pasture behind our house. The area's about 2 miles long and half a mile wide. We decided to go beyond the distance we were told we should. We actually saw two snakes and even a dead cow. As we were leaving, the cows were coming across to the side we were at and started chasing us. We ran, and at one point, two of us got stuck in the mud running. We finally got across the fence with a bull and a few cows about 200 feet away. They nearly got us. So, evil cows.
I don't understand. Astuda, as an adult, is only 5'2". So when he was 8 years old, he was maybe like 2.5 foot tall. A bull would have been terrifying at that age.
All right, Astuda's so let's short. See. Let's recap. Jack nearly drowned. Martin was chased with a chainsaw. Aroto was left at the zoo all day. Talos was lost at the theme park for 15 minutes. Dark Mika got in a car wreck and lost her ice cream. John Powers was possibly awoken by a ghost. Flick, scrape. Mo M, shark, maybe? James Parker was sent to Iraq in 2003. Latino Heat had the ghost mortician. KCS almost got hit by a deer. Billy P hates the I hate LOL and the SNL podcast in general. Christy was a cockroach instead of shampoo. Leon almost choked to death. David P had slurpy blood and TWA decapitations. Nathan was robbed and beaten up. Pernell didn't get the wings. Brian almost got eaten by a dog. John Prudlow severely fucked up his leg. DJ and Fine had a scary family. S. Archer had the unannounced friend and ghost kid. John Harvey had the mother. Jacob had Alien Trilogy. And Clifton had evil cows. So, out of all of these, which is the scariest?
The one I have the most points beside of... is, where'd it go? Where'd the tuberculosis the place one hospital. Yeah, Flick.
I was leaning between him and John Harvey's The Mother.
Yeah, that one's a good one too, and that's my second.
Oh man. Well, you had Flick as your top one. Do we award him the victory?
Yeah, I think so.
All right.
That's just unnerving as shit to think of something just fucking with you like that.
Well, Flick, congratulations. You had the scariest story, which honestly, while reading it, I was getting goosebumps. Mm-hmm. I was legit getting freaked out reading his story.
Yeah.
That one was really, really good. So yeah. I will be discussing with him the prize. He doesn't own an Xbox.
Oh, no.
So there is a chance that all the rest of the prizes might be split among everybody else.
That would be pretty cool.
That would be. So I got to talk with him, figure out what we're going to do about it. I do have a PS, like two PS4 games for him that I was going to give him as his runner-up prize anyway. But Now I just got to figure out what I'm doing with this. So
yeah, that's complicated.
But
stay tuned to your emails. Who knows what the fuck will happen.
Otherwise, it's goodies for everybody else, possibly.
Yeah. Either way, you're going to end up with something.
Yeah.
And you may end up with more something than something. We don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, you might.
Congratulations.
So, congrats to Flick. And that's it for our Halloween contest. So we're going to take a quick break. We're going to regroup and we're going to be back with more show. Sound good?
Sounds good.
All right, welcome back, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. We do have reviews to get to in this episode. It can't just be all fun and games and contests. Starting off
with that shit.
Seriously, fuck all the contests.
The fun stops now.
As you could tell, Tim Ekibis is here.
Heyo.
How's it going?
Good, man. I don't know. I think I ate too much for dinner. Maybe I shouldn't have had that big piece of chocolate cake afterwards, but now I'm sitting. I got my water, and hopefully I won't have to run to the bathroom.
I'm going to go with it was a good idea with the chocolate cake.
It always is.
Always. So, Vigi Games, you're here to talk about a pretty big one.
Yeah, yes. Gosh, perhaps my biggest review to date.
A niche little indie called Soul Calibur 6, developed and published by Bandai Namco, released October 18th on Xbox One, PS4, and PC for $59.99. Bring more than your fists to the fight, featuring all new battle mechanics and characters. Soul Calibur 6 marks a new era of the historic franchise. Welcome back to the stage of history. Tim, how is Soul Calibur 6?
Welcome back to the stage of history, motherfucker! Burr, 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 burr,
burr. Please tell me there's air horns in the game.
Maybe. I don't know. We'll get to it. Isn't that a great way to start a review about Soul Calibur? It's like, I don't know. Who knows? I'm not discounting it right off the bat. Yeah, so Soul Calibur, it has been a fresh minute for this series. You know, there was, Tekken is on iteration 7 now. I guess that's kind of its closest it came up in the late 90s, but Tekken is an entry ahead, as it should be, but it feels like Soul Calibur has been off the mind for a long time now. But yeah, it's 20 years of Soul Calibur. I started playing the Soul series with Soul Edge. I am a Soul hipster. And I wasn't a huge fan of Edge, but Edge was a cool game. Is a weapons fighter. And, you know, the home port had this cool, like, giant mission mode. But then it's like, yeah, there was fucking Soul Calibur, which... for you young people out there, it might not remember, was kind of like that game was huge in 1999.
I remember playing Soul Calibur on the Dreamcast on display at my local Hollywood Video.
Oh, well, you know, when did Hollywood Video go out of business?
It's been too long.
It's been a while. I did go into one while I lived in Buffalo, so there is that, but it's been a while. Yeah, I mean, like, that was the year I graduated high school, to date me. But yeah, it's like, I, you know, came out, it was a launch game for Dreamcast. I spent a lot of time playing it in the arcade at the University of Buffalo. And yeah, when Weiss got his hands on a Dreamcast, like, I was just like, this is what we're doing tonight. This is all that we're doing is playing Soul Calibur. Like, that was the huge game in 1999. It was like, it was like the best fighting game. It was the best looking game. It was widely agreed upon at the time to be one of the best games ever made. Still true, in my opinion. Soul Calibur 2, of course, was also incredible, which, if anyone listening to this is a longtime follower of X-Strike Studios, knows that that is something that we talked and joked about nonstop and created elaborate, very canonical lore for, involving Yoshimitsu and Lizard Man going on a road trip and having adventures. But, you know, then things kind of took a turn after 2. Because with Soul Calibur 3, they made the head-scratching decision to go from a multi-platform game to a single-platform game.
It wasn't even on the best-selling platform.
I remember us bitching about that when it happened, you know, 15, however many years ago that was. It was like, yeah, instead of... Soul Calibur 2 was awesome. It was out on each of the three systems at the time. Each system had its own exclusive character, you know, Link, Heihachi, and some fucking Spawn. but it was like, whatever. Each version had its own identity. Like, this is cool. This is awesome. And then they're just like, okay, 3 is just going to be on PlayStation 2.
And that's it.
And 2 platforms worth of fans were like, okay. Okay. I mean, I got it at the time, but like, this... is definitely when the series started to kind of go into a slump. Like, the fighting didn't feel as good. The story mode ended up being tedious because there was like these dumb QuickTime events in the middle of it, like the same QuickTime event in the middle of everyone's story. Like, their replacement for the mission mode, which had been so awesome in Soul Calibur 1 and Soul Calibur 2, was like this turn-based real-time, I don't remember which strategy thing where you played as your creative character. And I just remember it being tedious and didn't get very far in it. And I was just like, ah, okay. And then 4 came along, and in 4, I feel like the fighting was better. They had a better, slightly better mission mode, and that they had this tower you had to fight your way up. But then there was all, what everyone remembers about Soul Calibur 4 is the Star Wars.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, they had Yoda and Darth Vader as your platform exclusive characters, along with the Apprentice from, which at the time was the upcoming game, Force Awakened, or Force Unleashed, not Force Awakens, Force Unleashed, The Force Unleashed. And it just left a really weird stain on what was otherwise like a pretty solid fighting game. And that there was just this Star Wars stuff in there that just, even as a huge fan of Star Wars, just did not go, you know, just didn't go. They experimented with this armor break system where you could break characters' armor and then you do more damage to that segment of their body. But it was like, it was just not, it didn't really, I don't know. It was kind of more of a distraction than anything else. And then they're like, okay. We're gonna really hit the big reset button. And they went with 5. They kind of flushed a lot of the old characters and brought in the Soul Calibur kids. So, you know, instead of a lot of old favorites, you had a ton of new characters who use similar weapons, and they're like, okay, we're doing this big story mode to kind of explain everything. The story mode was like a huge disappointment. like that game, oh my god, Soul Calibur 5 was such a fucking disappointment for me. And it was at that point I'm like, man, we are 3 iterations removed from Soul Calibur 2. Like, maybe this series is just gone. You know, maybe it's just lost at this point. Like, the story mode sucked. Like, the new characters, like, I understand trying to freshen things up, but none of them really jived with me. The unlockable character, like, Killick was in it, but he was now a, like, an Edgemaster type character. They changed Lizard Man, who was one of my favorites, so that he was, like, totally different. And the changes they made to the fighting, like, they added a meter, and there was a lot of things that drew upon your meter. So it suddenly became just like every other fighting game with super combos. And most egregious is that, like, your guard impact, like the parry move that had been such a big part of Soul Calibur from the start, now took meter. So you had to think about using your meter when it came to, like, doing one of the most basic defining actions of the series. And I just did not fucking like Soul Calibur 5. So when they announced Soul Calibur 6, I was like, okay. All right. And especially when they announced it and I, you know, they're showing super combos in the first videos of the character announcements, I'm like, oh man.
Oh boy.
I don't know.
Should I be worried about this review?
Very skeptical. Yeah. Well, it's like, you know, we're in a hell of a fighting game renaissance right now, kind of kicked off by Street Fighter 4, which was like 10 years ago at this point, but still it's like, you know, fighting games are thriving all over the place. Street Fighter 5 and Dragon Ball Z is taken off. And you got tons of anime fighters that are thriving. You know, I talked about BlazBlue cross tag battle a couple months ago. Like Mortal Kombat's doing well, the Injustice games, there's like Guilty Gear, Smash is huge, huger than ever. Like Evo is huge. There's all these things. It's like, okay, well, you know, I guess Soul Calibur and Tekken, of course, Tekken 7 was a great game. So now here comes Soul Calibur.
How does it stack up?
How does it stack up? Well, guess what? This is like the fucking sequel to Soul Calibur 2 that I have been waiting for forever. Oh my God. This game is such a relief to play. Woo.
I'm so happy to hear that.
Oh my God. I was so happy to play it. Like, yeah, I got like an inkling of hope when they did the network test a couple weeks ago. And I was just looking at the menu. I'm like, okay, it looks like there's two solid single player modes in here. The fighting felt pretty good. I'm like, okay, maybe there's something going on here. So, all right, we got Soul Calibur 6 Back to Basics. Official title. So you got 20 fighters. The vast majority of them are returning fighters, pretty much hitting, I think, the who's who of what people want to see in the series. There's three new ones, Graw, Aswell, and the guest character, Geralt the Witcher, from the Witcher series, which is a nice extra bonus for me because I fucking love the Witcher games. So it's freaking Geralt. It's his voice actor and everything, and he fits in really well. Yeah, just to talk about the new characters real briefly, like Graw has a like double-bladed staff thing, blades on each side, think kind of like Darth Maul-ish, I guess. Which is cool. Aswell has like, I don't know, kind of they've kind of done this type of character before where he magically makes different weapons appear. It's not my favorite archetype. And the Witcher mostly, he's like, you know, he's a swordsman, compares mostly to Mitsurugi except with some magic, but he's been a lot of fun. I've been playing a lot of him online. They have a 4-character season pass, but oh wait, Tira's already in the game.
Yeah, that's weird, that's right? A touchy subject to some people. I know
it is a little. It's just like, man, if you're gonna have a if you're gonna sell a season pass, if you're gonna have DLC, don't have it there the day the damn game launches. Like,
yeah,
that just has been like a no-no since like the 360 days, you know.
And don't have one of the characters in the online beta test.
Yeah, she's even in the online beta. She's in like where did I see her? She must have been in one of the story modes that I ran into her. Like she's just in the game there, not dissimilar. I mean, admittedly, like some of the BlazBlue crosstag early DLC characters were in the game, but they were also free off the bat to download, the ones that appeared in the story mode. But Tira is paid if you want to actually play as her. I mean, I would think it would benefit like the game and developer in general if, say, like, hey, the first DLC character hits like a few weeks to a month after the game comes out. So then it's like, oh, okay, people will look at your game again and get back online because there's a new character. In the end of the day, not a deal breaker, just kind of makes you go, you know, it's just kind of like,
It's like you're not mad, you're just disappointed.
Yeah, it's just like, what are you doing? Stop it. But there's three more characters coming along the way, and also included with the season pass is like some character creation stuff which we will get to at length. I have as many notes on the character creation as I do about the entire rest of the game. I was fervently texting Whis Friday night, not talking about how the game played, just talking about the stuff in the character creator.
Oh God.
Which we'll get to. But yeah, when you do unlock a character, not only are they, you know, playable in the online, you get their style to use in your creative characters. They unlock their story in the story mode. So you're getting more than just the character to play as. But the fighting system, it feels like classic Soul Calibur. It feels like Soul Calibur 1, Soul Calibur 2. There is meter in this game, but it's only used for kind of your super art and this other thing called a soul charge, which basically empowers your regular attacks and makes available some other moves. It doesn't charge very fast. It's not central to the fighting the way like meter management, I feel like, is in something like Dragon Ball or Street Fighter. You know, like it's there, but it just gives you access to those moves a few times in a match, and it feels good. You know, it feels like not too much, but it just dust enough. One of the new things they added is called the Guard Edge, I think. There's a lot of mechanics in this game. So what this does is you do kind of like, it looks like a parry, and your blade like gets wreathed in like this white flame. And if somebody smacks you while you're doing that, it enables this quick little like slow motion rock, paper, scissors clash. Which is cool and looks cool. But if you just keep charging it up, it does like I believe it's an unblockable attack, which does a lot of damage. So that's a cool thing to play with right there. Because if you hit somebody before they get the slash off, well, then you're enabling this other little mini game thing. You can try to dodge the attack, or you have moves in your arsenal, which will break that guard specifically, which they tell you about in the tutorial, which we'll get to. And Guard Impact doesn't cost meter. So you can have these dramatic back and forth, you know, parry battles, which I fondly remember from Soul Calibur 2. These dramatic, like, okay, I hit you parried, then I parry your counterattack, then you parry my counterattack, and just going back and forth.
Nice.
It's cool. The characters, I haven't gotten to spend a massive amount of time with every character, but the characters that I've played with, they feel like their old selves for the most part. They've moved some of their attacks around, I think, to make things a bit more uniform from character to character, so that you know. And I always felt like the Soul Calibur fighting system to begin with was very intuitive. You have your horizontal slash, vertical slash, your kick, and your guard, and kind of you have your 8-way run and pushing directions with one of your attack buttons usually kind of sends an attack in that direction. If you're like pressing down towards your opponent, you're going to kind of stab towards their shins. If you push at your opponent, you're going to do a more of a direct thrust. You pull away, it might be the attack like comes from more behind you in a larger arc or something like that. I always felt like it made a lot of just sense. It was just always very intuitive in my head. Playing Killick, who was like my main in Soul Calibur 2, took some getting used to because it feels like they moved his moves around a lot. But, you know, the characters, they feel like they feel. They haven't dramatically changed anyone, I don't think, that I've found to this point, unless there's someone I'm forgetting. But they have their moves there, familiar. If just things have been moved around just a little bit. But for the most part, very good, very happy with that. Now, modes. They got a fucking mission mode in this game, an expansive, globe-trotting mission mode, just like the old games, just like the thing that everybody loved about Soul Edge and Soul Calibur 1 and 2. Oh, it makes me so happy. That was the thing. That was the, like, they announced that at the beginning, like, hey, we're making Soul Calibur 6, Geralt's gonna be in it, also a mission mode. I would have been like, okay, sold. That is, like, what I want the most, because it's, like, especially now, I don't have a lot of people locally to play Soul Calibur with, and, you know, online is a lot better than it was 10 years ago, but I want that big mission mode. I want single-player content in my fighting games to give me, you know, something to do with it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, you take a you when you start off this mode, the Libre de Soul mode, you make a character, It's kind of annoying. You can't just bring over one of your already created characters that I could find, because I spent a bunch of time making a character that I intended on bringing over into this mode, and then they're like, there was no place that I could find to bring it over. So just kind of be aware of that. So you make a character with the expansive create a character mode, which I'll get to in a moment here. And then, you know, you're dropped into there is story to this. You get paired up with Maxie pretty early on and start going on an adventure from town to town. There is a darn good tutorial in here. Like, if you've never played Soul Calibur before, if you are not into fighting games at all and you wanted to pick up a fighting game, like I have always, like, Soul Calibur is the game to pick up, because I do feel it is very intuitive, and they do have a really good tutorial stage here, where you go to talk to this old kung fu man that lives up in the mountains, and they explain things, like, pretty, you know, break it down. This is how guard works. This is how vertical slashes work. You can avoid vertical slashes by running around. You can't do the same with horizontal slashes. You have to kind of hold block in order to duck in place and do crouching moves. This is how super combos work. This is how guard impact works. This is how counters to this work and counters to this work. So it's really good at breaking things down that I don't feel like any Soul Calibur has broken down quite as explicitly and in as much detail in the past. And I should also mention, like, when you go into if you're in your training mode, like, they have a bunch of just, like, text in there, like, different techniques for different characters and a lot of basic techniques. Like, it's kind of a bummer that they don't have, like, outright demonstrations of it, but it's stuff in there. It's like more advanced fighting theory for different characters, which is cool.
That's pretty awesome.
It is pretty cool. I'm like, yeah. So if you are not sure which character to pick up, or you want to just look, you know, I'm reading through that stuff. Like, I don't claim to know everything about Soul Calibur at all. So yeah, there's a good tutorial in there to get you started. And then, yeah, there are missions, and the important thing about the missions, and what has made it interesting in games past, is that, like, from mission to mission, they change up kind of the stipulations of the mission. So it's like, okay, here is a mission where throws do more damage. Here's a mission where low attacks or counter attacks do more damage, or this specific thing does more damage, or both, you know, this attack is better for you and your opponent, or you have to beat three opponents in a row. There's a good one pretty early on where you are on the deck of a ship and it is super slippery, so you go sliding all over the place. But it's fun. And on that one in particular, I think throws do more damage. So, like, being able to slide your way into position to throw them is kind of a nice extra challenge. But at the same time that, you know, you're having fun, you're challenging yourself, you're doing different things, like, you're also learning more about the game mechanics. Like, okay, I need to learn how to, if throws do more damage here, I need to learn how to do position myself for throws better. Because as you win battles, you level up, your character levels up, you earn gold, you might find better weapons. They give you a lot of flexibility in this mode. Like, you can jigger around your character, like, change what they look like, change their weapon style at any point. But yeah, you buy better weapons that do more damage. Hang on, I'm responding to a text.
Is that David?
It is.
Tell him to go whatever. Fuck himself.
He always makes me late, so, you know, like, one time he was, like, super late to a recording, so I don't even care. So, yeah, you're gaining experience, you're leveling up, you're getting gold, which you can use to buy weapons, you find other weapons, might have special effects, and in turn, the enemies, the encounters that you come across also have a certain level next to them, so if you might run into encounters that are too high level for you, that you need to go grind some more experience and come back. I mean, there's
RPG elements.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. RPG elements. RPG elements to the point that there is a good and evil system.
Oh,
like,
God.
You make choices that are branded with blue and red, like it's a fucking game from 2005. You know, like,
oh, my Lord.
Like, imagine, like, Fable KOTOR era of games suddenly having good evil systems in them, which is highly amusing. I mean, it's very basic, but, it's a little fighting game mini RPG. It's awesome.
That's so
just
cool.
To have it there. It is really cool. But yeah, after you get about five or six levels in, things start to open up. You get all these side missions. You go on what are called expeditions off the beaten path, which cost you money, and you have to have food in reserve, like almost like a little Oregon Trail thing.
Oh, God.
which there are random encounters along the way, possibly. You might get jumped by bandits or whatever. But yeah, when you stop in towns, you can buy food. Food has different effects, you know, might empower certain attacks during battle, might just restore your health, which you might need for lengthy expeditions. Going on those expeditions, you know, completes side quests because they're side quests. gets you gold, gets you experience, might get you items, etc., etc. The point is, this mode is very robust and very fun, and it's going to keep you busy. It's going to be something to keep you coming back to it. I don't know that it's going to have the amount of unlockable stuff that the older ones did, because in the older games, this is how you'd unlock like different weapons and sometimes different characters. But in this case, everything seems to be more or less unlocked from the start. Like, you are unlocking art along the way. You are earning, you can convert your gold into edge points or something like that, soul points, which you can use to buy more art in the museum portion of the game. It's just, you know, not the most exciting stuff to unlock, but part of that is because the stuff already exists. So on top of all that, did I get everything? Got everything in there. There is a story mode, the Soul Chronicle. So yeah, on top of the whole mission mode, there's a story mode. Kind of the main story, which seems to be the lengthiest, I guess, standalone story of it, just follows like Killick and Maxie and Zhenghua, basically through the story of them meeting up through the story of Soul Calibur, the first one. But every single character has a story that is multiple missions long. The story is told through, like, you know, kind of still paintings in the background and text, but they are voice acted. So there is that. But it's a cool way to get, well, one, it's, again, just something to do, something to fight. You spend more time with each character. You learn a little bit about, like, kind of how they fit into the universe. But yeah, every character has a story mode. And every story is a few stages long. And they don't necessarily, you're not necessarily going up against, like, other, like, main character fighters, because they sprinkle the creative characters all over this, and the mission mode, I should say, for that matter. Like, just custom made characters are popping up with different fighting styles, like, all over the place. Like, in Geralt's in particular, because he gets, you know, transported into the world of Soul Calibur from his universe, so he's fighting a lot of revenant demons that keep attacking him for whatever reason as he tries to get out. And then at the end, Mitsurugi's like, I want to fight you! And you're like, I want to leave, but okay. should also say that, yeah, Geralt does have his own stage from the Witcher universe with Witcher music, which is badass. So again, that's cool. Lots to play with. And then, of course, you have online play with ranked and casual matches. Was getting some laggy matches over the weekend, but it was better yesterday, so I don't know whether it was just luck or whatever. I did speak with a friend of the podcast, Wood, who's playing on PC, and he said for the most part his connections have also been good, though he's had a couple laggy ones, so it might just be hit or miss depending on the person. But seems to be good for the most part. If you're gonna play a lot online, which eventually at some point you will. But yo, let me tell you about this create a character. Holy shit.
I completely forgot you still had the character creator to do.
This is the moment you've been waiting for. So you can pick from any of the fighting styles for any character. You're not just building from a human base. There are humans, lizard men, goblins, mummies, skeletons, elves, robots, like bunny people. There is all demons. Did I say demons? I didn't say demons. There's probably like a dozen different like character races you can start building off of, which is a lot of fun. There's a bunch of clothing slots, like, you know, you got like head, shoulders, neck, accessories, undershirt, overshirt, pants, waist stuff, boots, etc. You know, greaves, arm guards, and stuff. And not every character has every slot, just because I think they realize armor would fit weird on a lizard man. But on top of like all that different layers of stuff you can put stuff on, there's also special items. And this is where things can start to get really fucking crazy. So there was a wrestling game for the GameCube called Day of Reckoning. We are reaching into the past here. And this game had an interesting quirk to its create a wrestler mode, in that you could attach objects, like kind of these, I don't know, random different objects to your wrestlers, except they didn't actually have to be touching your wrestler. They could just be floating in space. Like, for example, there was a character that somebody fucking made, I don't know, called the Poisoned Fireman. And he was a regular fireman, except he had a life preserver floating about 10 feet over his head.
Why?
Because it's hilarious, Joe.
Okay.
When he'd get, like, hit in the stomach, and you wouldn't see it in the ring half the time because it would be floating above the camera. You would just see this freaking life preserver come whipping down as he got kicked in the stomach or whipping around as he got suplexed or something like that. And it was awesome. So, yeah, if you want to have a heart just floating over your guy's head, go nuts. And there's 3 slots for this. I saw someone make Thomas the Tank Engine's head with this.
Oh, Jesus.
It gives you a lot of freedom to do just weird stuff, which is beyond the weird stuff they give you to begin with. Because for backslots, they give you wings. Like, you could put dragon wings and butterfly wings and I almost said elf wings, like elves have wings. What does that mean? Angel wings. They have wings in there. They want you to get weird with it. You have colors and patterns. Patterns are customizable on every article. So just besides like the color palette, you can put a pattern. There's like pages of patterns you can put on things, which is like just obnoxious, like plaid, polka dot, whatever the hell. There's just pages of this shit, pages of this stuff. On top of all that, you can customize your character's voice. Like, they have bass voices, but then you can modulate like their pitch and what it sounds like. So you can have like really grumbly, like alien voices that are barely understandable. But then on top of that, you can go through and pick their voice lines for different situations, like for when you pick them, for when you're entering the match, just like things they say during the match, during certain moves, like probably like at least a dozen different voice lines you can pick out. And there are some of them, like there is pages and pages of different voice lines with like different emotion behind them. And then there's some that are just bullshit. Like, I hope you have a good vacation. Sure. Why not? Happy Halloween. Like, just nonsense. And it's great. Just like, oh my gosh, there's so much stuff. And then when you're done with all that, you got to make a portrait for your character, right? So you got custom portraits with custom backgrounds, custom frames. You get to put your character into different poses. Like, if it's one of their like taunt animations, you can slow it down, slow motion, change the angle, and get the perfect shot, the perfect ridiculous shot of your character against your background. Like, it is one of the most expansive and detailed, like, create a character modes I have seen. The only thing it really lacks is the extreme body deformation. I should say the extreme asymmetrical body deformation of SmackDown Here Comes the Pain, where you could give a character one giant arm. And here, I mean, like, you can mess with, like, you can make your upper arms big and your lower arms small and mess with the size of your waist and stuff. But, like, that stuff is, like, within reason. It doesn't seem like it can get too crazy. But just the fact, like, all those voice lines, all those patterns, like, they really go ham with what they let you do with this. And the characters just still function. And it's great. And I haven't even really dove into, like, going nuts making, you know, random licensed characters yet, like some people have.
Yeah, I saw on Reddit someone made a Robbie Rotten.
Sure.
And it looked bang on. It was pretty crazy.
Somebody made a koi fish out of Waldo so that when he leans back and is on all fours, he looks like a fish and hops around.
I saw someone do a Magikarp like that.
Yeah, it was. It was the same thing.
Oh my lord. Fucking crazy. Yeah. People are insane. Ridiculous.
Like, my only real nits to pick with this game is that there's no team battle mode, which is an old favorite mode from those games where it just, you know, load up 8 characters on each side. That's something that, you know, they could patch in. It doesn't feel like there's a ton to unlock. You can unlock the boss character, and there's art to unlock. But, you know, it's not anything as crazy as, like, weapons and stuff. And maybe I just haven't got to it yet because that mission mode is so expansive. Those are kind of my nits to pick. As far as DLC goes, you know what? Well, I do feel like it needs an Edge Master, if not a character, at least the style, which is, this is the one where it changes the weapon every single round of a fight. Mm-hmm. I would really like to see that. You know, Tyr is already in there, so they have 3 more characters coming, I have to imagine. I mean, there's only so many that aren't in this game. I have to imagine we'll see Yun Sung, the Chinese broadswordman, probably Hildy from 4. Lizard Man, if I'm being selfish. And I know fucking Lizard Man's moveset is in the game. I've seen the Lizard Man do his moves. Just give me the moveset so I can make my own Lizard Man, god damn it. Don't give me Aeon with his weird wings and two axes and acting like Kratos from the fucking PSP one. No thank you.
Jesus.
But yeah, and then more creative character stuff coming in the DLC too, so that's exciting. And maybe they will just have like some that are fighting styles without characters, you know? I don't know. Since they already have the weapons in there, maybe they'll just do like Cassandra style, which is similar to Sophitia's, I don't know, like a Li Long style, just different styles with the same weapons. That's what I'd like to see, but
in due time.
So the only question left is a half hour later, what do you think of the game?
I am so happy with this game. As a longtime Soul Calibur fan who was not happy with the series, not like thrilled with the series for 3 entries. Like, I always loved Soul Calibur except for Soul Calibur 5. But it felt like they were never going to be able to find their way back to, you know, what made the series so incredible in its early days. But here we are. This game's awesome. It has a ton of single player content. It's really fun to play. I think it's really accessible. Y'all should buy it. And doubly so because, you know, from what I've heard, like, it really took a lot of pushing to get this game made. So this may be one where you want to vote with your dollar. Like, if you are on the fence about Soul Calibur, get off the fence, give them your money, play some Soul Calibur, have fun.
I think you've convinced me to put Assassin's Creed away and fire up Soul Calibur.
Hell yeah. Ugh, I can't wait to play more. It's so fun. I'm like, God, there's so much more. There's more story. I haven't finished every story. There's so many more missions to do. Like, I haven't gone in deep to like learn the characters, like some of the characters yet. I've played so much yet. There is so much more, and which is the best thing one could possibly feel after spending a little under a week with a fighting game.
Yeah. Well, Tim, it is always good having you on chatting about this stuff. Do you have any final words before we send it back to me and Cole?
Buy it, because this is the sole game of this caliber.
God damn you. All right, and Cole, now you're back.
I'm back. I didn't go anywhere.
Well, Tim was here to do a review.
Oh, fuck Tim.
He went on long enough, so you're going to have to keep your stuff shorter. He went on a solid half hour about Soul Calibur.
Like, can we just break down the fact that asking me to keep my review short is like the hardest part of the job?
Yeah, but I got to ask you anyway.
I'm going to try, but I don't make any promises.
All right, I'm sure this will be a nice short one. Next game to talk about is called the Jackbox Party Pack 5, developed and published by Jackbox Games, released October 17th on Xbox One, PS4, Steam, and Switch for $29.99. It's the biggest party pack yet, including the return of the classic pop culture trivia mashup You Don't Know Jack, Full Stream, the game of hilarious hypotheticals Split the Room, the lyric writing robot rap battle Madverse City, the inventive drawing game Patently Stupid, and the outer space fling fest Zeeple Dome. Cole, tell us about Jackbox.
Well, you done told everything now.
Okay, well then give us...
How am I supposed to keep a review short when there's 5 games involved?
Yeah, exactly. So... Let's go through them all. Let's start with You Don't Know Jack, Full Stream. Tell us about that
one. Okay. So this one, and they refer to it as Bench Pipe in the game as well. I don't know the difference between, like, I never played the other You Don't Know Jack games, so I don't know where the fuck Bench Pipe comes from, but it's a big pink logo that pops up while you're playing.
I didn't get it either, so.
Yeah. But this is basically just your, like, your really eccentric trivia game. And I loved it. I think most people didn't really care for it because the questions are worded really awkwardly. But if you've ever heard me speak, that kind of speaking in circles is like my favorite thing to do ever. And so I got the questions. I was on top of that shit. I was like, my native tongue. And I was so happy. But everybody else seemed to struggle. There's some mini games to it. So it's not all just trivia. There's one mini game, drove me fucking nuts, called Repetition, 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 where you literally just like have to count how often certain letters or words pop up on the screen and then click them on your tab while you're playing and get it correct to get enough money. So you're awarded, you know, points in the form of fake currency for, you know, when you get something right. And they also take away when you get things wrong. The questions, it kind of breaks down into, like, there's a trivia section, and then the next section, round two, will be something completely off the wall, like, here's a comic book, and here's French food, and decide which of these random words go to which category. And it's stuff that could really go both ways, and you're sitting there going, I don't know what the fuck these things are. It's purposely designed to make you realize you're an idiot.
Yeah. You don't know Jack has always been good about making people feel stupid.
And it does it very well.
Which is what I love about the game.
Indeed. After that, we have Split the Room. This is one that I found people had a really hard time understanding the prompt. Even when I let the intro play, every time we played it, people were still getting confused by the prompt. So the prompt is pretty simple, actually. It goes into this long-ass explanation of, you know, there's alternate timelines, and you have to decide, would you do this action if this was the scenario? The scenarios are set up to purposely make you feel uncomfortable. And each person has to come up with one aspect of the scenario or the question to kind of draw out that uncomfortableness about it. And you're awarded points if you can get people to split as far as the room goes. And, you know, half of the group says yes, half the group says no. The more even your split is, the more points you get. And also how quickly people make up their mind and split will get you bonus points. I thought this was a lot of fun if you could get people to understand it.
I had a fun time with that one. I didn't have a hard time explaining it. It was basically you wanted to make, you were intentionally trying to get people to have a hard time choosing between them so that you could split the room.
Right.
Which is, you know, and the name.
I found that when I was playing, a lot of people wanted to just put yes or no in the blank instead of actually coming up with an actual thing to put in the blank. And it would be something mundane, like, you know, you're stuck in an elevator with your boss and you can do one thing. A fairy will grant you one thing that you can do to get out of the elevator right now. Otherwise, you have to stay there for 18 hours with your boss. And so then, like, the thing that the fairy can grant is what the player has to come up with. So, you know, like, I put Belch the alphabet or something mundane. And otherwise, like, other people would just be like, no. And you're going, no, that's not the way you do this.
Yeah, that part of the reason I liked this game was because of how you had to think differently. Most of these games, you think of the stupidest, funniest answer. Everyone picks it and you win. This one, you have to try to get people to not pick it. But right. You still want a couple to pick it. It's tough to explain, but once you play it, it kind of clicks and makes sense. At least for me, it did.
I think one of the greater things about it is that, you know, the standard answers of dicks or vaginas isn't going to be sufficient. Like, that seems to be the going rate when you play these Jackbox games, is that everybody just sees how many different ways they can make a vagina or a dick joke, which isn't a bad thing. It's just that that's how it seems to play out when you're not playing with kids who aren't allowed to make those jokes. So it was nice that it did, that kind of formula didn't really work with Split the Room, and people had to separate it out and do it differently. From there, we had Mad vs. City. This game was so cringy, but it was so good at the same time.
I loved this game, and I know it's going to be a really divisive one, but I had so much fun playing this one. Everyone said it was super cringy. You know, it depends on what awful white people you get to write raps.
Yeah. It plays out like a Mad Libs game, where basically it's like the game auto-generates a sentence to start your rap with, but you get to pick one word at the end, and it'll give you some kind of clue for what context you need, like, oh, you need a verb that ends in ed or something like this, and then the next line is blank and you have the whole line to yourself, but now you know what the previous line was and you need to make it rhyme. Then you have the formula repeats again for the next two lines. there's so much fuckery that can happen when you give people the ability to just put in whatever they want.
And yeah, and 90% of the time, the people don't know how to rhyme.
No, no. And to some extent, sometimes you can do it and not rhyme, and it still comes across funny if you're, like, being overt that that's what you're trying to do. A lot of the others, you're just sitting there going, I was streaming it when we played, and one guy just straight up, like, he rhymed masturbate to rage, and I'm just sitting there going, what?
That doesn't rhyme.
It doesn't rhyme, and I'm not amused. That's a good way to get kicked out of here. But otherwise, it was like when people had really good verses, it's hilarious because the whole thing is put up to where it's giant robots that are rap battling each other. And so if you can imagine the screen reader voice on Windows 10, just that dry,
the robotic voice,
robotic, just, but it's trying to read rap lines. Oh my gosh. It's hilarious. And I put cojones in one and it called them cajones, and I tickled myself all day long. Cajones. I just kept saying, oh my God, it's cajones. So I'm very easily amused. Clearly I'm a 12-year-old, but I thought it was funny. After that, we had Patently Stupid. This one was ultimately my favorite, even though it very quickly devolved into dick jokes every time.
I didn't get to see this one, so I'm lost on this one.
We played this one twice after you left.
Nice.
Patently Stupid gives the premise of it has these little like half-ass prompts that are missing a word or so, and it asks everybody to fill in the prompt. Basically, you're creating a problem. Like, I have a habit of walking into walls, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the prompt will say, I have a problem with walking, and then blank. And then, you know, somebody would put into walls or into rivers or whatever they wanted to put. They create the problem. Then everybody's given two possible problems to try to solve. Once you click your problem, you're given a cocktail napkin and a marker and a highlighter. And you have to draw a solution to your problem. So if you got, you know, walking into walls, you might draw like a headlamp and a cane. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
After that, you have to give your invention a name and a tagline.
Interesting.
So once everybody has come up with their solutions to their problems, have given them names and taglines, then they're presented to everybody as a group. So you go through everybody's presentation. Here's the problem. Here's the tagline. Here's the name. Here's the product, what it would look like. Here's the tagline. And then after everybody's presented, it comes up and it asks you to decide how much money you would give to each invention for solving its problem. So you can give 800 to one person, 500, or yeah, I think it's 800, 500, and 300 are the prices. So, and then each round has a set funding goal that each patent has to reach in order to succeed. So if you don't reach your goal, if people won't fund you, you fail. If you back something that fails, you don't get any bonus points. But if you back another invention and it succeeds, then you get bonus points as well.
The points
sound complicated, but once you're in it and you're actually playing through it, it really makes sense and it's not as bad as it sounds.
Well, you'll have to stream it and I'll have to join you sometime then.
I have to stream it again? Streaming's hard. I felt bad when I signed off because I actually had people watch. I stream art, nobody watches me. I stream Jackbox and everybody's like, yay!
Everybody loves dicks. Jackbox.
Everybody likes to draw dicks.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to watch me draw dicks. They want to draw dicks.
Anyway, final game in the pack. I did see this one, Zeeple Dome. This does not seem like a good streaming game at all.
No, I didn't understand this game. On the bright side, this one can be played solo. So if you really don't want to slog it out on stream, you can play it alone. Fun fact, but you don't know Jack can be played solo too. Those are the only two in the pack. Everyone else requires at least one to two other people with you, but those two can be played alone. But Zeeple Dome, you basically just fling around, and you know what it reminded me of? That game where we were the aliens inside the VHS tapes.
Yeah.
And I didn't particularly like that mode of gameplay. So if I had to pick one of these that wasn't my favorite, Zeeple Dome would get it.
Yeah, Zeeple Dome is more like an action game than a puzzle game or a word game.
It's far more skill than just strategy and jokes.
Yeah, this requires basically requires people to be in the same room, because just the delay from Twitch is just going to make it incredibly difficult to play. You have to fling your enemy in your little character into enemies and try to destroy them. And occasionally they'll have a certain color shield around them that specific person has to hit the monster. But because there's a delay, that person won't know in enough time to actually get there, or they'll get bounced around, or it's definitely not a good streamer game. But
yeah.
Overall, the five games, what do you think of it as a bundle?
As a bundle, I think it's a lot of fun. Yeah, Zeeple might not be the strongest contender, but the other ones far make up for it. And even if you're looking at it just from, is this going to be something to have fun streaming? Absolutely. But if you're not even a streamer, if you're looking to play this at home, what, you know, for a party, I can see number one busting this out when her friends come over. I mean, it would be one of the top ones that they would grab. They love the Jackbox games anyway, and you're not going to be disappointed if you've played the others and you load this up. You're going to be like, yeah, this is Jackbox, and I'm enjoying it. Just, you got four games instead of five. Yeah.
Well, if you're playing with friends, Zeeple Dome might be right. worth trying out.
I tried to play it alone. I didn't play it with number one because she's had school all week, so I didn't get to play it with her yet. So I might have a very different opinion once I can sit down and like play it with my kids this weekend.
Yeah.
But as of right now, it's bottom of the totem pole. Yeah. The other ones were great. I loved them, and I do still give it a buy it. Jackbox is just fucking good, guys.
Yeah.
They're like the Artifacts Mundi of party games. You just know you're going to get quality.
Yeah, I agree. A solid collection of games. I think Zeeple Dome drags it down a bit, but the others definitely make up for it. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Yay, we agree. Next!
By the way, I like how we're trying to do quick ones, and that one was still 16 minutes.
I'm sorry, I'm trying. Five games!
Next game to talk about is called Crayola Scoot, developed by Climax Studios, published by Outright Games. Released October 16th on Xbox One, PS4, and Switch for $39.99, Steam for $29.99. Make your mark in this color-powered Trick Scooter Championship. The crazier your combos, the more color you'll splash on the Scoot Park. And in Crayola Scoot, color can change the world. Cole, what is Crayola Scoot?
This is like Splatoon and a BMX game had a love child. For babies. Yeah, it's very much you are spraying out brightly colored Crayola paint wherever you go in the skate park, but you're riding a scooter. And so you got to do all the tricks, and you got to do the, what's it called when you spin the handlebars and the bar tail spin? Whip. Yeah, it's a bar spin.
After you spin the bars, it, what's like, it called?
Well, yeah. Look, I've had a rough day.
Anyway.
Speaking of dicks. There aren't any
kid game review. We got to watch the dick talk.
Yeah, please don't draw any in this game. I guess you could.
if you're really good, you could probably boost your way and paint a dick on the ground.
Right. So, there are three different arenas that you can skate in, although you're limited to the first one until you get enough stars and fame to unlock the others. It's very beginner, kid-friendly, you know, BMX trick kind of game. But there are game modes where it's more like Splatoon, where you've got to try to cover as much of the arena in your paint or your team's paint. Mm-hmm. It does have four-player local co-op. There is no online. And some of the game modes do allow for team play. So if you want to play with your friends who are hopefully sitting on the same couch. If they're somewhere else, you're just out of luck. You do have a color bar that depletes while you're boosting. If you want to fill that up faster, you're going to have to run over where you've already colored at, which kind of makes the challenges where you've got to cover the whole arena either easier or tougher, depending on how well it's going for you. One thing that's really interesting, though, is that there's kind of like control points that will pop up around the different arenas. And if you control a certain number of points on each arena, there's a wonder that comes out. And the wonder, it's something different for every map, but it will come out and like, in one instance, it can be a blimp and it will come splat large chunks of your paint color everywhere so that you're a little ahead of the game. I lost my place in my notes.
What other modes are there in the game?
Event types include Color Frenzy, Splat Tag, and Crazy Crayons. Crazy Crayons is like, there's crayons that literally just spawn all over the map, and you just chase them down and try to get them as many as possible. Color Frenzy is, like I said, where you're just trying to color as much of the map as you can, where others are trying to color it over top of you. Mm-hmm. And then Splat Tag is one person will have color, and everybody else has to like try to hide and not get hit with the other person's color. So it's basically like tag, and that there's hiding places on each of the maps where you can get to and try to hide and not be caught by the color. Overall, it's really good kid-friendly game. I thought it was really creative. You could buy different bike part, or not bike, but scooter parts. There's a horse mode, but it's called Scoot instead.
Of course.
You can, after you do certain events, there's a leaderboard of legendary scooter riders who will challenge you and try to you know, move you up or down the board depending on how well you do. I think there were 10 overall.
I don't remember how many.
But anyway, as far as it plays, the controls were fine. I thought the variety of game modes was good. I think it would be a lot of fun for kids. Obviously, once you get out of like the Crayola age, you're going to be like, what is this? Why is this a thing? I think
a lot of kids our age might like it. I felt
you
that
think so?
It played a lot like Skate. And I think if you could get over
it's Skate. Yeah,
I think if you could get over, hey, I'm playing a Crayola game that is geared towards children, I think you might have a lot of fun with it. I worry that the controls might be a little complex for younger kids.
Yeah. And you know what I found that I was doing a lot? There's actually an area you can go to practice the controls for the tricks. And I actually just kind of went there and for like 15, 20 minutes straight, just practiced doing different combinations before I went. So I could kind of see where I would just like stick number 3 in there and just let her do the combinations and think she's doing a good job.
Yeah.
One thing that did bug me though was how fast the combos ran out. Like there was not enough time to keep the combos chaining. You'd think you had gotten a combo of 4 or 5, 6, and then you look at it, it's like, nope, you're on combo 1. Good grind. You're like, what?
You son of a
you. So it was a little stressful to not be able it, and you gotta wonder, you know, if adults were having trouble keeping those combos chained, obviously it's going to be even harder for kids.
Kids are screwed.
Yeah, and for some of the harder levels, if you're playing on higher difficulties, trying to get more stars to unlock stuff, you're out of luck if you can't get those combos to run together. Otherwise, I thought it was really good, and I had a lot of fun with it. And I won't be surprised if number 3 just spends a lot of time riding around in the basic skate parks, because you don't even have to do the events. You can just, all 3 parks are there in like the hub world if you want to.
Just ride around and have fun.
Yeah. You don't get any money that way, but you can have fun.
So $40, what do you think?
I kind of feel like the price is a little high. I am going to give it a recommended try it for people with kids, but it does feel like the price is kind of high given that there are only the 3 worlds.
I think the Steam price of $29.99 is a lot better.
Oh, yeah.
It would have been nice to see the console versions come down to that, but, you know, I don't know what goes behind making those choices.
I mean, I've, Sometimes I can understand a jump of a couple dollars, maybe even five or so, but that's a lot. I don't understand why.
It happens all the time where you see a game for 50 on Steam and 60 on console.
Yeah.
So it happens. It's a bummer that it happens. I think $30 is a great price for the game.
Well, that's kind of what I expected you to say, because I hadn't looked up the price of it any. And I was like, oh, this is going to be like, you know, 27, 28, maybe 30. Yeah, I was wrong.
What price is a game at 27?
Because sometimes games get priced overseas at £25, and then it ends up being different for us, and it hits like 27 and 28.
Oh boy.
It's a weird thing, but it does happen.
Yeah, true.
And so now my mind just kind of like flips to the odd numbers to adjust for currency changes.
Yeah, those are the outliers.
My brain functions as an outlier. Have you met me?
No, I haven't. Next game to talk about is called Sky Hill, developed by Mandragora, published by Daedalic Entertainment, released October 24th on Xbox One and PS4 for $19.99. World War III is over, the world's infested with mutants, and your supplies are running out. Fight your way down this damned hotel from your penthouse on the top floor, craft weapons, search for food, and reach the exit. Otherwise, you'll be torn apart, starved to death, or maybe both. Cole, what is Sky Hill? Okay.
It's going to be both. There is no maybe. No, you're just going to fucking die, because this is a roguelike.
Spoilers.
Not a spoiler. See, look, you're going to move down like one floor and then immediately get shredded by a mutant. Back to what I was going to start this with, though, is that Sky Hill is a point-and-click survival game. People were holed up in a hotel with some kind of bioprotections on the fancier floors for the VIP folks. Unfortunately, there was a catastrophic event, and now all kinds of people are mutants. That sucks.
Yay.
You're not a mutant, though. You were holed up in one of the fancy rooms, but you're running out of food, and you're hungry.
Yay.
And so you know what that means. You have to leave your happy place.
Yeah.
So, so this place is a point and click. It is a roguelike, and you have to manage your character's health, for one, obviously, but also his hunger. Hunger is the driving motivator for why you leave the bunker in the first place. So it only makes sense that as you're searching for food and getting into fights with these mutants, you're gonna be hungry. And so as you click to move around the hotel is basically a grid of three, and it's broken down into floors, with each floor having three rooms. The middle room is always the stairs and the elevator, and then there's a room to the left and to the right. You can explore those two rooms, but every time you go from one room to the next, it costs you 1 point of your food.
Hmm.
So you have so much food that you can, you know, hold that you've ate, obviously. And your hunger will gradually get worse. And if you hit zero for your hunger, then it starts to take away from your health, and it will take 2 points of your health for every room that you are hungry. So good luck. You better hope somebody left some parsley hanging out in a cabinet somewhere.
Spoilers, they didn't.
Sometimes they did. Sometimes they leave scrap metal. Sometimes they leave brass knuckles. I don't understand why people in a fancy hotel had so many pairs of brass knuckles.
Win-win.
Yeah, well, they're not that good. You're better off making a hammer with a stick and some metal, which you can do because you can craft. Some things can be crafted on the fly. Some recipes can be put together on the fly. But for most of them, you're going to have to risk a little bit of energy to take an elevator all the way back up to your penthouse so that you can prepare more food, or if you've taken some hits but you've ate well, then you can spare to sleep for a little while. And if you sleep, then you trade in your hunger points for hit points, and your health will go back a little bit. But ideally, you want to get all the way to the bottom and get out of the hotel. I didn't do that. I got really close a couple times, and then I died, and bitches, back to square one. Literally square one. good luck to you.
That's a roguelike.
Sometimes you think, you know, this is going to be a run. This is going to be a good one, and I'm going to make it really far. And then you run into one of the biggest mutants that's possibly in the game, and it fucks you up before you're two floors down. Other times you find yourself on floor 27, and you haven't had to deal with anything. You're just like, this is great. But it is just the roguelike nature of it. You can upgrade your VIP suite in addition to just finding shit and crafting shit. You can actually upgrade it so that you can have access to better recipes that will keep you full for longer. Or you can upgrade so that when you're sleeping, bad things don't happen to you. if your suite isn't properly upgraded, if your door isn't barricaded, sometimes mutants will just come in and like steal shit out of your backpack at night or fuck up your world while you're trying to sleep.
Nice.
Other times, you know, everything's barricaded up and you have good dreams and you wake up and you go and you stab some mutants with a kitchen knife. As far as combat goes, the combat's really neat because everything is point and click, obviously. And that still follows through for the combat in that you just, okay, you're in a room with an enemy. You have the option to expend your food, obviously, and get the fuck out of that room and not fight with them at all. Or you can encounter them and it will come up with the options and it will show you three different body parts that you can hit. It will give you a breakdown of what your likelihood of hitting that body part is, what percentage, and also how much range of damage you can possibly do if you successfully hit it. So you're using a kitchen knife and you run into one of the standard mutants and you're going to try to hit him in the head, but you might only have a 50% chance of successfully hitting him in the head. But if you do, it might do 11 points of damage. Whereas you could maybe hit him in the arms, have a 90% chance of successfully hitting him, and only do 3 to 4 hit points of damage.
Yeah.
You have to really think about how much hit points do I have? What happens if I kill this thing? Because some of them will explode and poison you, and then you are losing whatever you encounter in the fight, but also if you don't have antidote,
you're fucked.
You're gonna lose health and food as you try to go find the shit to make an antidote.
And then you die and start over.
Which did happen to me like 5 times. You'd think I'd learn not to fight those things.
So the game sounds pretty good. Any negatives?
Not that I could find. It played perfectly. It's maybe not the most graphically intense game. I think that some people could find it would be a little monotonous where you're just like going through the floors over and over and over. But for me, there was enough switch up in the mutant types and the potential to not find enough weapons or to not have enough food or to not have enough medicine at any given time kept me on edge enough that I was like, you know, I don't know what's going to happen when I go down the floor.
Yeah. Well, overall, $20. What do you think of it?
I give this a buy it. This was like a sleeper enjoyment. I didn't realize I was going to like this one as well as I did, but I loved it. I'm going to play more tonight.
Nice. Doc Havoc in chat saying negatives, RNG can fuck you. That's in every game.
Yeah. And it's crazy because you might be in a combat situation and it'd be like, oh, you have a 90% chance of hitting his arms. Is that what you're going to do? And I'm like, fuck yeah, hit them arms. And then you miss.
Yeah.
Because that shit happens.
Yeah, 90% isn't a guarantee.
No, you will miss. You can miss 3 or 4 times, and then you're dead when you thought you had a fight under lock and key.
Well, shifting gears drastically, the next game to talk about is called Nickelodeon Kart Racers. Developed by Bamtang Games, published by Game Mill Entertainment, released October 23rd on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $39.99. Hit the road with racers from some of your favorite Nickelodeon series and a variety of slime-filled tracks in the ultimate race to win cups and upgrades for your carts. There's no slowing down there. Shift to the next gear and challenge your friends in split-screen racing and battle modes. We should probably get this out of the way right away. This game is being butchered in reviews.
Is it?
Yeah. The one I saw gave it a 2 out of 10, which I think is kind of harsh on the game. We should get it out of the way. Obviously, this is a kart racer.
Yeah.
A character-driven kart racer.
The fact that it's called Nickelodeon Kart Racers, my biggest gripe right away is that there's only four shows represented.
Right. From Nickelodeon. There's ten characters over four shows, and the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles are four of them.
Yeah.
Which I'm not mad about, because I love the Ninja Turtles.
Actually, I think there's 12 characters.
Are there 12?
Yeah.
Maybe. Because there's SpongeBob and Patrick and the squirrel. Oh,
we don't need to list them all.
I know. I'm just like.
But the only shows represented are SpongeBob, Rugrats, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and shit, what was the last one?
Hey Arnold.
That's right.
Yeah. Like, I would have liked to see All Real Monsters.
Exactly. There's so many good Nickelodeon shows. They could have even gone to like real life stuff and brought in Pete and Pete.
Yeah.
That would have been awesome. I think they severely limited themselves with what shows they put in the game. There's just not enough variety. There's not enough characters. There's not enough representation of classic Nick franchises. It's like, where's Ren and Stimpy? Where's Doug? Where's Angry Beavers?
Why can't you keep Patty Mayonnaise?
Seriously. Well, I guess that's Disney now officially. But
Oh, that might be why.
But wait, still, really? Where's Cat Dog?
I don't remember Cat Dog.
Really? One half was a cat, the other half was a dog.
Like, I remember the character, but I don't remember the show. I didn't watch it.
Yeah.
But, I can agree with the lack of representation. I just played as a Ninja Turtle the whole time. I just wanted to be Michelangelo.
I was Leonardo.
So.
The tracks aren't anything super amazing. You know, they get the job done for what they're supposed to do.
Do you know what's neat about them, though?
The slime?
Well, that too. But the tracks change every other lap or so. Like, they switch up just a little.
Oh, yeah. I noticed that.
Yeah. That was neat. Because then it didn't feel quite as repetitive.
Yeah. The other main gripe I have with the racing is it just didn't feel fast enough.
Yeah. I can get on board with that. I actually had an odd problem.
What is it?
I know that like the whole orange and green thing is Nickelodeon, but whenever the slime would take over and you'd have to be like on a boat or whatever, it just burned my eyeballs so bad. All the bright green and the bright yellow and the bright orange is, and I'm just like, I can't. It's just too neon. Maybe it's because I'm getting old.
Maybe
a kid wouldn't be bothered by it, but man.
But those kids could get off our lawn the way it is, so.
Yeah, if you're trying to appeal to the 90s Nick crowd, maybe tone down the neon just a little. Maybe go for pastel highlighter colors.
it's got to be green. It's slime.
Yeah, but not everything else had to be vibrant enough to gouge your eyes out over
True. The handling in the game, for the most part, was decent enough. Handling on water, I thought, was atrocious. I hated any kind of water stage that I would be on, or slime stage, not water stage, slime stage.
I ended up getting the slime down, but I hated the flying parts.
Yeah.
There were a couple where you had to fly, and I was just like, every time it took off, I was like, fuck this!
But it's nice that they would change it up with some flying areas and some water areas, slime areas. They did a good job of changing things up and keeping things fresh with the track changes and the different environments that you would race on. There were a lot of stages that you could race through. I wish they felt more like they were out of a show. Mm-hmm. It just, nothing felt authentic. It just felt very generic. Like,
oh, here's the school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It felt very generic overall. I went into this game with high hopes. I love a good kart racer. I actually bought this one and had it pre-ordered and shipped to my house from Best Buy. So shout out to Best Buy for getting it to me a day late.
Nice.
Yeah. I was just kind of disappointed. It didn't have the speed I wanted. It didn't have the variety I wanted. This isn't an awful game. Based off of the other reviews I've seen, I think they're being way too hard on it for what it is. I think it's a decent enough middle of the ground kart racer for kids. I think the price tag could come down a bit. If this was a $30 game instead of $40, it'd be an easier sell.
it's nothing overwhelmingly amazing, and I didn't think it was necessarily awful. It was just middle of the ground.
Can we give it a try it, but wait for a sale? Because the prices on these are just blowing my mind.
Yeah, I can agree with that one. It's, you know, if you could find a Redbox, give it a shot if your Redbox is carrying it, or if you Gamefly it. I think it's worth checking out and seeing if you would enjoy it or enjoy playing it with your kids. People our age, those 90s Nick fans, I would look elsewhere. You're not going to find what you're looking for here.
Maybe there's the potential for DLC and we can get more characters later, but I'm not going to hold my breath.
Me neither. Anyway, next game to talk about is called Heavy Fire Red Shadow, developed by Anshar, published by Mastiff, released October 16th on Steam and PS4, October 19th on Xbox One for $19.99. A PlayStation VR add-on is available for $9.99. Climb behind a devastatingly powerful turret-mounted machine gun and mow down waves of enemy forces. Call in supply drops and reinforcements, earn promotions, upgrade your combat abilities, attack the online leaderboards in endless mode, and prepare for a non-stop high-intensity firefight. Cole, tell us about this one.
So, I'm assuming this was a VR port to start with, because you do take control of a stationary turret. But on the bright side, unlike, say, Time Carnage, where you only had a limited field of vision, this actually lets you spin your turret 360 degrees. However, you are still stuck. You're not moving anything. this is a military-style shooter. There's a war going on. You're getting ambushed by waves and waves of enemies. They start off pretty mundane. You just got some little dudes with AK-47s, and you're cruelly plowing them down with the turret and just making them eat sand. And it's a little sad when you put it like that. But, but eventually, they get worse. And then they start coming at you with RPGs, and then they have kamikazes who will rush at you, which is terrible because you can't run to get away. and then eventually there's all the way up to trucks with turrets and all kinds of shit just going on. Giant boats bringing trucks full of people at you. It's an interesting game. I think it plays really well. I think the concept is pretty interesting. But I think it kind of wears out its welcome pretty quickly.
I could see that.
There's four levels, and each level is broken down into a day and a night. So you get to play it twice, which just kind of wears it out really quickly. By the time you beat it, you're like, fuck it, I'm done. I'm so tired of this level. I need to change the scenery. Oh, look, I'm in another turret somewhere else.
Well, that's the point of a turret shooter is that you're in a turret.
It is the point. I know that's the point. And I'm not saying I got bored. I sat and played it for an ungodly long amount of time. I've only got to play one more level left at night, and I'm done. I've beat the game.
Nice.
And I don't know how I did it. Like, I just kind of did it mindlessly. The first couple of times that I took after it, it was really kind of rough. I was like, shit, this game's going to be far harder. And I started like looking for difficulty settings and shit. There aren't any. Because as you plow down the waves of enemies that are coming at you, you're gaining XP. That XP serves two purposes. First, it allows you to call in specialties like a supply box, which may have health or may have rockets. You can call in reinforcements who will be ground troops that come out and shoot the people for you so that you don't have to. Or so that you can focus on ones further away. Or in some cases, you can get a fucking attack helicopter and just let it come mow everybody down while you watch.
Sweet.
Additionally, with that XP, though, it turns into skill points as you level up. The more people you plow down, the more skill points you got. You can pause and go into a menu and apply these skill points to different upgrades. It does not take very long for you to become super OP. In the beginning, one good kamikaze running at you is going to fuck your couch. I hope you didn't like that couch. Because it's nasty now. But after a couple of upgrades, it gets to a point where you're like, the very first upgrade I bought made the kamikazes explode when I shot them.
Nice.
Catch them motherfuckers getting off a boat. Everybody's going to die.
Sweet.
Then you turn around and you can buy an upgrade that makes it so that when you kill somebody, you get health back. Well, now you're just like blowing up the kamikazes, and two upgrades in, you can barely take any kind of hits because as soon as you blow up somebody, you're getting your health back. Which means then you no longer need to chill out with the supply drops hoping for health anymore. And so you can afford to buy an upgrade to make the attack chopper last longer or to drop rockets. And then it just by the beginning of the second map, I was just like, I can't fucking die. I couldn't die if I wanted to. I'm not really mad at it because, hey, easy game, easy gamer score. It's probably going to be a fairly easy completion if you're just careful.
Just time
with
consuming.
Yeah, it's just going to take you a little bit of time. And even still, I don't think it was maybe, I think I maybe played 4 or 5 hours earlier. And like I said, I only got one more to go, and that will probably take about 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So it's a reasonable completion. I think there's one achievement for like killing 30,000 ground troops. That might be the one you just have to sit and grind out.
Yeah. I do want to talk about some ugly points of the game. First off, it is kind of an ugly game. It is not the best looking game.
Yeah.
In VR, it was especially just pixelated and kind of, it wasn't an impressive game visually.
Which, yeah, I didn't think it
doesn't need to be
bad, but it's not going to rock your socks either. I did have a problem, though, on some of the later chapters where, like, you're kind of shooting back toward the horizon because that's where the enemies are because they spawn really fucking far away.
Mm-hmm.
And the reticle actually gets distorted when you're trying to shoot back that far. And then to top it off, the reticle is a white circle with another white circle around it. And then if you're actually hitting somebody, a white circle blinks with each hit in the middle.
Yeah.
I would give anything if that circle that blinks was a different color. Because sometimes it's really hard to tell, oh yeah, I actually hit somebody, or I'm just shooting mindlessly at this rock because they're hiding behind it. I did find one thing helped. I got kind of excited because you can change your field of view. And everybody's like, oh, bigger field of view, you're going to do better. And so I upped it immediately without thinking anything about it. And I bumped it up to like 85 or something like that. And everybody was so goddamn tiny. It was like shooting at these little bitty ants in the horizon. And I'm just like, I don't know what I'm doing. I went back in and I set it back down to the default 70. And suddenly I could see everything. And I was like, well, son of a bitch, why are you going to put a field of view slider in there if it's just going to make everything so tiny you can't see it anyway?
Yeah.
So.
I don't know.
Nice on paper, but not in actual function.
Going back to the VR mode, I thought it played a lot better in VR than non-VR, just because you're able to look around left and right and see where enemies are without having to move the reticle the entire, you know, slow way forward and backward. I know you play with your sensitivity up, but I usually keep it down lower. And moving it left and right and up and down can be so slow when you need to go 180 degrees in the opposite direction and you're just getting shot the entire time.
Yeah. Yeah. With my sensitivity set way up, I didn't have that kind of problem. But again, like I max that shit out as soon as I load up a game.
Yeah, I don't. So it was a bigger hurdle for me. I really wish that the game had PlayStation Move support so I could just point and shoot.
Yeah.
Instead of having to use the controller and move it. This is also one of the rare games that I played without inverted controls. Yeah, because instead of my character looking up and down, I'm just moving a cursor around the screen, and I, you know, stuff like that, I play standard instead of invert.
Yeah, so makes sense.
I wish it had PlayStation Move support. Overall, I don't know if the $10 extra for the PlayStation VR is a must own kind of thing. The game for $20 itself, I would still give a solid try. It's enjoyable. Mm-hmm. I had that feeling of one more round. Let me see how far I could get. Fuck it. One more round. Let's see how far I could get. It's not going to change your world. It's not going to set the world on fire. It's not the greatest looking game, but it's
mindlessly enjoyable. Yeah. Like, you're just mindlessly plowing shit down. You could easily set your sensitivity up on high and just spin in a circle and knock shit out. And you would eventually be okay. As long as you had all the upgrades and shit and were doing fine in that regard, you'd be fine.
Yeah.
All right, we got one final game to talk about tonight. That is called Midnight Deluxe, developed by Petite Games, published by Rattalaika Games. It released October 24th on Xbox One for $4.99. In this golf-like game with a perpetual darkness setting, your task is to guide a little square-shaped fairy named Midnight to the safe zone in each stage. Cole, tell us about it.
So this is basically a simple run-of-the-mill puzzle platformer.
Played like golf.
Yeah. Wow, I hadn't thought of it like golf, but yeah. I guess
really?
So.
You didn't think of it as golf?
I didn't think of it as golf. I was just thinking of the platformer aspect because platforms.
You go into a safe hole at the end.
Well, it's just an exit portal.
I immediately saw golf with this game.
Now I don't like it as much. I don't like golf. Fuck this.
Anyway.
No, it's an adorable little game. It's not something that's going to like shake up your world, but the puzzles in it are really well thought out. There's a ton of levels. There's actually 85 in all. If you're an achievement whore, you don't actually have to complete them all to complete the game. You can stop around 40-ish. Mm-hmm. Which is when it gets really goddamn hard anyway.
Yeah.
So, it's very simple. Just use your thumbstick to point in the direction that you're going to launch your little fairy dude. And depending on like how far you push on the thumbstick is how much oomph is behind the launch, basically. That's the technical term too. It's oomph. So you can, you know, either just do a little tiny jump or you can fling yourself clean across the board. Press A to launch after you've picked your path and how hard you want to go at it, and hope that you don't fall down the hill and land on spikes or a saw or lasers or in a pit or literally anything bad. And otherwise,
everything is going to kill you in this.
Everything
game.
Kills you. Even if it's like just an area of the map where there's no black border, if you hit that, you're still technically out of the level and you're dead. Do over. It's like a sideways pit or a pit at the top or something, if you would. It will still fuck your feelings. I don't think it's, you know, going to be one of those games that you're like, oh my God, this is my most favorite game ever. But if you want to challenge yourself and you enjoy platformers, you're probably going to be pretty happy.
And best of all, it's only $5.
It's only $5 because Rattalaika is on a roll.
They really are. They put out awesome, cheap games that are always fun, usually solid gamer score.
Yeah. And I like that the way that they star the levels in this, there's no effort to speed run it if you don't want to. You don't even have to get 3 stars on everything if you don't want to. You only need to do 1 level for the achievements. But I found myself doing levels over just to see if I could. Because I get mad after I would beat a level and see it took me like 3 or 4 launches to do it. And then find out, oh, if I could have done it in 2, I would have got 3 stars.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, because I know I can do it in 2. You go do that shit again and again and again. And that's why I didn't make it all the way to 40 yet.
You'll get there.
Let alone 85. But I do want to keep going at it because I really did have a lot of fun.
Nice.
And it has level select. It so does. If you want to go back, if there was a level that was particularly getting on your nerves and you want to go back and try it again, it's right there. You just got to go click it.
Yay. So your overall verdict for $5?
Buy it. It's good. It's actually really good. It's very responsive and a lot of fun. Infuriating, but fun.
Awesome. Well, that is it for this episode. Thanks again to everyone who sent in their contest entries. That was a lot of fun.
We survived it, Joe. We survived SMLOE.
My voice is barely surviving right now, so just give me some final words and let's end this son of a bitch.
Speaking of dicks.
Speaking of dicks.
Last night.